So, oh, okay. So we'll just wait. Good evening. Hello. I'd like to first call to order a public hearing on proposed local law number E of 2019, a local law enacting the New York State Real Property Tax Law, Section 421F, Capital Improvements to Residential Properties Exemption. Is there anybody here who would like to address the legislature on that local law? I don't see any, so I will close the public hearing and open the November 7th. This feels like December outside. November 7th, 2019, meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Will you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Roll call of members.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Foreman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne will be arriving later this evening. Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Later this evening is an option. I'm here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. I have two proclamations tonight, and we will wait till Leslyn and JR get here for this, for the one about Veterans Day. But I do have a proclamation about home care aid appreciation week. And Sue Ellen Stewart from the Visiting Nurse Association is here visiting their service. And I'd like this to present this to Sue Ellen. Whereas the County of Tompkins, New York, recognizes the nearly 300 home health aides who provide care to hundreds of residents in our area, and whereas home health aides provide high quality and compassionate health care services to those in need, especially at times of crisis, and whereas home health aides work conscientiously to provide services and care, enabling individuals to remain in their homes and live as independently as possible, and whereas home health aides are vital members of our health care team and improve the quality of life of our older citizens, people with disabilities, and their families, and whereas November is National Home Care and Hospice Month, and November 10th through November 16th is National Home Care Aid Week, and whereas the Health Planning Council of Tompkins County, home care agencies, and other organizations in this community are sponsoring activities in recognition of the contributions of the home health care aid. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the full second week of November 2019 as Home Care Aid Appreciation Week in Tompkins County and urge citizens of this community to honor and celebrate this special event. Sue Ellen.
Thank you, Martha, and members of the legislature. I just have a couple words that I want to say. As we all work together to create an age-friendly community, it is important to recognize the importance of home care in developing this community. The availability of home care workers, nurses, physical therapists, social workers, occupational therapists, nutritionalists, and home health aides play a critical role in creating a community where people thrive and want to live. November is National Home Care and Hospice Month, a month when we say thank you and celebrate the staff that provide these services every day. Please join me in saying thank you to all of them that are dedicated to making a difference in people's lives and helping them live at home as long as possible. I want to point out that we have a critical need in Tompkins County for home health aides. BOCES has been approved to provide the training, but has had difficulty having enough students to hold the classes. They are working with Tompkins County Workforce, and there is funding available to cover the cost of training. The next class will be held in January. I ask all of you to help with recruitment to fill this class, and especially to establish a wage equivalent to the value of the work that they perform. Talk to your friends, your neighbors, and bring it up in meetings. We can all make a difference. Lastly, I want to invite you to our annual Home Health Aid Recognition event being held at The Space at Green Star. The event will be on November 14th from 4:30 to 6:30. It's a time when our community says thank you to all of the home health aides that are providing services in our community. Thank you for this proclamation of Home Care Month and recognizing the aides providing services in our community. Please help us spread the word about recruitment and say thank you to any home care workers that you might see in November. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue Ellen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I would like to ask for an executive session for later in the evening for discussion of real estate negotiations and a personnel issue regarding a particular person. With that, I want to ask, see if there are any public members of the public who would like to speak. We have one sheet. Okay. Tom Shelley, welcome. What? Oh, I have to read the rules. All right, Tom.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to winter, our first snow of the season. I'm here on behalf of the Waste Reduction Subcommittee of the Environmental Management Council. We support the 5-cent fee on paper bags that's being proposed for the legislature. We feel that, if nothing else, it's a public education measure that people will realize that paper bags are no better than plastic bags, which have already been banned, becoming on March 1st, 2020. And we encourage everyone to use reusable bags. So we fully support that measure, and we hope it passes tonight. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And have a good meeting.
Thanks very much, Tom. Thank you for your work. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the legislature? Frank. Frank Proto, a good friend and former legislator.
I'm sorry. I want to thank you as chairman or president, I'm not sure what the correct title is, of the county's health planning council. And on behalf of the proclamation that you just passed or proclaimed, thanks. You know, some of us have been fighting this battle for home health aides and a raise in pay for a very long time. So if you can make it on the 14th, is it? If you can make it on the 14th, I hope you don't mind. We may have a guest speaker, but she's limited to 2.5 hours. Martha Robertson, is that? If you can make it, Martha.
I'll try to limit myself to 2.5 hours.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Frank. And I'm sure everybody knows Frank was the former legislator from the towns of Caroline and Danby for more than 25 years. He's our current one of our representatives on the TCAT board. All right. Thanks, Frank. I don't see any municipal officials. Am I missing anybody in the corners? I guess City Council is tired from passing their budget. Is that what happened?
Probably.
So, all right. Legislator, privilege of the floor. Anybody? Amanda.
Sure, I'll go first. I just want to let everyone know that on next Tuesday, November 12th, is the Cornell Cooperative Extension annual meeting and breakfast. It's at 8 a.m., which is a little harsh, but it does include a breakfast buffet, which will be very lovely. It's at The Space at Green Star, and the guest speaker is, I'm not sure I can pronounce it, but Jichuki Francis of Tabasamu Africa Hub in Kital, Kenya. And he's going to be speaking about youth leadership and community development. And I will be there, and it will be a lovely event, and you are all invited. Thank you.
You said that's at The Space?
It's at The Space on the 12th at 8 a.m.
Thanks, Amanda. Anna.
This is just fellow legislators.
I wanted to let you know the annual state convening for the organization Local Progress, that is an organization for progressive elected officials, that is November 15th through the 17th. They just finalized the agenda. I'm happy to send it out to anybody if they want. That is in Saratoga Springs. And there is financial aid for anybody who's interested in going. Let me know.
Thank you, Anna. Anybody else? Mike Lane.
Every year I remind us that our county charter, which is our constitution for our county, provides that each year the legislature will renew itself by electing a new chair or re-electing a chair, whatever it is, and vice chair. And that's different than many counties, so where the leadership is elected for the full term, whatever it is, 2 years or 4 years. I think it's healthy for our community to do that. I have been an advocate for keeping this, or making this as transparent and open to the public as possible. It is a system where the 14 elected legislators choose the leadership, but I don't think that should be done in secret. That's my opinion. And I think that folks that are interested in serving as vice chair or chair ought to say so publicly. Again, this year I would be interested, but I'm sure there are other people who will be interested as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Wait a minute. Who else? Anna, you raised your hand? Annie, okay.
Thank you. And this is also is for fellow legislators. If you haven't signed up yet, we got an email a week or two ago from Jeff Dunn at Emergency Management, and there's a training. It's called Emergency Management Certification and Training. So if you didn't see that email, please look. It's to help us in case there's a large emergency, a catastrophe, or something in this area, and so it will help teach us what our part is in that and how to work with local municipalities, including our sheriff's department, local police, our EMS. So the training is on November 20th, and it's 2.5 hours. Although it says it's 6:30. Oh, it's 6:30 to 9, and dinner is provided, and it's at the Enfield Fire Department. The email said that you had to sign up by October 31st, but I was able to sign up for it, and they said there's lots of space at the fire department for as many people. They can hold up to 140 people, so they don't expect to overcommit to that, and the training is free.
Can I ask a question?
Thank you, Anna. Annie. Yeah, Mike.
And some of us took that training, I think that same training, a few years ago. I remember Glenn was there, among others. Is this the same that we took a few years ago from Beth Harrington, or is this something different?
So before I was here, I actually have no idea.
Well, okay.
I don't know if anybody else knows.
Thanks anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else? All right. George, we're going to go out of order a little bit. Welcome. Thank you for being here. And come on up to the mic. And then, JR, when you get settled a second, we're going to do the proclamation on Veterans Day. We have not done that yet, so thank you for being here.
Yeah, hi, I'm sorry I'm late.
Sorry.
Traffic. we passed our budget. We voted to pass our budget last night. It was a challenging budget. It was tight. The mayor added, the big news was he added a position for a Green New Deal and $100,000 to conduct a study about the Green New Deal and how we should proceed. There was a lot of public input on that. People wanted us to do more. We actually added just a little bit last night from contingency funds that we may use and we may not use this year. Other highlights were we were able to maintain the number of firefighters we have now, and we also added staff at GIAC, taking positions that were temporary and made them permanent part-time positions, and that will allow GIAC to keep the good people they have. And that's about it.
Thank you. Thank you, George. Any questions or comments? Amanda.
Do you know how much funding was in your budget for the public library?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I thought that was a county.
Yeah, they always ask you guys for some money, too, though. And I know they specifically asked for a little bit of an increase, but.
Oh, because of the bus stop issue and the complications that arise from having the bus stop out in front of the library?
I'm not sure if it had to do with that. I mean, I think you guys usually give them some amount, and I know that they had asked for a little bit extra, but...
I don't know.
Okay.
I think the point is we have every county taxpayer supports the county library. Most other municipalities also support a local library. Not most, many, six or seven municipalities support their own local libraries as well. So that's kind of been the theory behind approaching the city and town of Ithaca, which don't have other libraries but only rely on the county library. So. That, I mean, we've had that discussion with the library director, and so I'm glad you've asked the question, Amanda. Thank you. Mike Sigler.
George, this is out of the blue. I'm sorry. So if you're not going to answer, that's fine. The ice damming of the creeks, it just came to mind because it was snowing when I came in. Did that work out last year? You guys had come up with kind of a solution of pumping warmer water into the creeks and kind of breaking that up.
Yeah, that I don't think we faced any ice jams last year, but there's two points of good news on that topic. One is that we are proceeding with, it's actually taking gray water from the wastewater treatment plant and using that to melt the ice. And the other good news is that, and that's proceeding. I don't think it's not hooked up yet. The other good news is we're actually going to proceed with dredging, at least on Cascadilla Creek, to begin with, and that should also help potential ice dams.
Any other questions for George? George, I was wondering, the news reported on the extra that you put from contingency into the Green New Deal, and it was $34,000 and change or something. Can you tell us where that number came from? We were curious.
Yeah. It was proposed that we add a second position halfway through the year, starting July 1, and that's the number that would be half a year's salary. But we made it clear last night that this money might not be used at all if we're not ready to put together a job description. And it also might be used for Green New Deal equipment or activities that would not necessarily involve a new position.
All right. Thank you very much. And I just wanted to also thank you for including the $100,000 extra for the Community Housing Development Fund. The city on an annual basis puts in $100,000, and we made a request for an additional $100,000, and I understand that was included in the budget.
Yep, and you also increased your
Well, we're voting on that tonight, so stick around. But, excuse me, it's not actually in our budget. It's a separate pot, so we're voting on that separately tonight. So.
And one thing that came out in the Green New Deal discussions was an eagerness to collaborate where we can, not just with finances but also with knowledge. So we look forward to that.
That sounds great. Happy, of course, to do that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. Thanks for being here. And Megan McDonald is going to be making a presentation on the Community Housing Development Fund in a moment. So if you wanted to hear that, we invite you to stay. But I want to go back to our other proclamation tonight. And J.R. Clairvoy, I'd love to have you come up and accept this one for us. Whereas November 11th heralds a time when people across our great nation honor the military service, past and present, committed faithfully by scores of men and women in the uniforms of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and their reserve components, including the National Guard. And whereas during the early weeks of November, Tompkins County residents joined in this time of commemoration through the Veterans Day Parade, which just celebrated its 100th processional on November 3rd, and through local gatherings of solemnity at the 11th hour of the 11th month of the 11th day. And whereas President Woodrow Wilson set aside November 11, 1919, to commemorate the first anniversary of the Armistice Agreement marking the end of World War I, whose action was followed by an act of Congress in 1938, making November 11th a legal holiday to be dedicated to the cause of world peace. And whereas in 1954, this nation's leaders renamed Armistice Day as Veterans Day after the call to arms during World War II and the Korean conflict, and at the urging of the Veterans Service Organizations, brought attention to the need to honor American veterans of all wars. And whereas Tompkins County residents, regardless of race, culture, or gender identity, continuously heed the call to duty for our nation, even through the present day's time of conflict, which has claimed the lives of two sons of this county in this year of 2019. And whereas the vast workforce of Tompkins County's governance comprises scores of veterans, active duty and reserve military service members representing every branch of the U.S. Armed Forces, now therefore I, Martha Robertson, as chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim this a season to celebrate and, in the words of the Veterans Administration, honor America's veterans for their patriotism, love of country, and willingness to serve and sacrifice for the common good. And be it further resolved that I call upon all who live in and frequent the county of Tompkins to join me in honoring said constituency, especially those who are also Tompkins County employees, with a simple but heartfelt thank you during this observance of Veterans Day on November 11th, 2019 and beyond. So, J.R.
For a shy person, is it? Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Legislature. I would like to say that in the time that I've just crossed 3 months now being in this role as your Veteran Service Director, and it's really been an adventure because there are a lot of people in this community, in this county, who are very, 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 very happy with you with establishing this position. They keep me busy. I'm learning a lot, and they've all been in accordance with saying thank you to the county for doing this because, for one, they get to drive locally, but two, they also appreciate being able to have this investment in their benefits by our county. So thank you all for this opportunity. Thank you for this service. Thank you for this proclamation on behalf of our county's veterans.
Thank you, J.R. And I think Monday morning at 11 o'clock in DeWitt Park is the traditional commemoration for our veterans. That's one of the commemorations this year. All right. With that, I would love to invite Megan McDonald, the Deputy Commissioner of Planning and Sustainability, up to the table for a presentation on the Community Housing Development Fund. And Katie Borghella, our Commissioner of Planning and Sustainability. Twofer. Welcome.
Do you mean to move this slide for you? great, so thank you very much for having us. You get me for a total of 4 slides before I bring in the real talent here tonight. But we're going to be talking to you tonight. The agenda is we're going to bring you up to speed with what is the Community Housing Development Fund, how did we get here, what are the impacts of the program, and what do we have planned for the future. So basically, the program is a partnership, a very successful partnership between the county, the city of Ithaca, and Cornell. And it works to provide dollars for developers who are working on construction and rehab of housing units. And it creates permanently affordable housing as a result of it, and it's a great investment tool. The project caps, the maximum funding awards are $400,000 for the for sale units and $300,000 per project for the rental. And this is a little slide about the Community Housing Development Fund, but it could also be titled any kind of planning slide. So it's interesting. We started this in 2004 with the first county comprehensive plan, and then in 2006 we completed a housing needs assessment. 2007 we did a housing strategy based on that needs assessment. 2007 to 2009 we developed the Community Housing Development Fund, and then 2009 we started implementing. Each year we do an evaluation to kind of refine and improve the process, and then we started the whole thing over again in 2015 with the comprehensive plan, and basically every 10 years we did the next step. So the housing needs assessment was updated in 2016, the strategy in 2017, and now we're still rolling forward with implementing this program.
So time is precious, so if I roll through anything too quickly, please let me know. But this is really the nuts and bolts of how the program works. We have a memorandum of understanding between all the funding partners, and this establishes the program for the current period, which is running through November 2021. Every year we put out a notice of funding availability, and this establishes the funding rounds. It sets the deadlines, the review criteria, lets applicants know what the application process is. And then when those applications come in, the Application Review Committee, which has members with a variety of expertise ranging from real estate development to architecture, human services, et cetera, they score those applications and make a recommendation to the Program Oversight Committee, which has representatives from each of the funding partners. And that committee makes a formal recommendation back to the funding partner organizations about how much to award different projects and who's kind of the different award amounts from the different funding partners to put into each project. And then each funding partner actually holds their committed money themselves until a project is ready to draw. And so each funding partner has its own process to formally authorize disbursement of its funds. So for county money, that means that it goes through the Housing and Economic Development Committee and on to legislature. You authorize disbursement of any county funds. If a project requires a seeker review, you would make that determination prior to dispersing funds. And then once a project has its award contract in place and it has its building permits, so we have some assurity that it's going to move forward to construction, at that point the project can draw its award. So as you might have guessed, a program like this doesn't run on dollars alone. So in addition to the financial commitment the county has made, the county also has committed administrative support for the program, and that's done through the Department of Planning and Sustainability. So this kind of runs the range of supporting the review committees, helping applicants or prospective applicants through the process, fielding any inquiries from the public. I will say other communities, other states are interested in this program because affordable housing is a challenge in communities throughout the country. All of the details of managing the awards process, the contracting, et cetera. So when all of this has us a little worn down, and I will say the administrative activities have ramped up as the program has become more successful and had more projects rolling at the same time, the thing that puts us the spring back in our steps are the impacts. And so we just completed the 20th round, funding round of the program. And so to date, there have been $4.7 million in Community Housing Development Fund awards committed to projects that represent 654 units of permanently affordable housing. And 385 have gone to construction or are already complete. I will say we've got another project drawing in a few days. And this represents an additional $177 million in leveraged funds that are helping bring these projects from concept to reality. So to save you some math on a cold night, right now we're seeing that $1 in Community Housing Development Fund investment is leveraging approximately $38 in outside investment in these projects, and we're averaging around $7,000 per unit of permanently affordable housing, which is legally defined as 49 years or more. So there have been a lot of successes. And to give you a sense of the actual tangible reality of the program, you'll see that projects are spread throughout the county, primarily in our development focus areas. And there's a real range. This program supports both for sale and rental projects. Ranging from, this is an example of a house that's being rehabbed and the lot subdivided to create two additional units, so you'll have three for sale permanently affordable homes, to really a new neighborhood in the city that includes both rental and for sale housing and community amenities like the Creek Walk. Supportive housing, such as this for formerly homeless men, this one for formerly homeless young people, including those who are parenting young children. This project, which we expect to break ground soon and has half its units set aside for those with mental health diagnoses. And this project, which is really kind of the anchor first big development in the Lansing Town Center area, which is also one of the county's development focus areas. And I should mention, you've also made a municipal housing affordability grant for a traffic study that will be critical in a second phase of this project moving forward. And so as you can see, I could pepper you with a whole lot more photos, and I'm happy to share more with you, but you've got the list of all the awards to date in your packets, and I've got slides at the end should we have time. In terms of tonight's business, the resolutions before you, there are three pieces of background information I wanted to share to help with your consideration of those resolutions. The first is the county's HUD program income funds, and I realize I've been before you earlier this year talking about state program income funds. This is a different thing. This is money that when the county was receiving its CDBG awards directly through the Department of Housing and Urban Development and not through New York State. And this is really for grants from before 2000. The loans that are being repaid from that home ownership assistance the county provided, when those loans are paid back, they become HUD program income that the county has on hand. And this has been the funding source that the legislature has used to fund its past and current commitment to the CHDF program. However, beyond that current commitment, there's currently about $580,000 worth of additional HUD program income funds on hand. HUD has authorized the county to use however much of that remaining program income that we have to the extent the legislature desires for this program. This isn't a typical use of HUD program income. They've authorized each of the two MOUs, but they've now authorized any program income that you wish to use that we still have on hand because they, talking with staff, they've been very excited to see what a relatively small dollar amount is leveraging in terms of actual new construction. I will say that since this year we saw the fairly sudden take back of New York State program income and had to scramble to really commit that to activities within the county to make sure it didn't go away. There are some staff concerns that it's always a possibility that HUD may go through a similar process in the future and try to take back any uncommitted funds. switching gears to the low-income housing tax credit program. This has been the primary tool in this country for building new affordable housing since 1986. And each state administers the tax credit process and how those awards are distributed. In New York State, the Community Housing Development Fund awards actually net a project additional points in their applications for a very competitive process. So that's why we've been kind of an example that even New York State Homes and Community Renewal uses with other communities about how local commitments make projects more competitive. So we've been averaging 1 to 2 tax credit project awards per year in Tompkins County. However, in recent years, we've been seeing 3 to 4 proposals being submitted for tax credit awards coming out of the county. In addition, about a month ago, the state announced that it's moving from having 1 tax credit award round per year to 2. So we have hopes that we can increase the number of tax credit awards for projects building affordable units here. And I should also note that tax credits are the largest source of leveraging for this program. So an award, in terms of projects that this program is supporting, tax credit projects build the most units, and they also leverage the most outside funding sources. So in terms of what we're seeing in the near term and these last 2 years of the Memorandum of Understanding for the program, in the early days, we had more funds than we had projects moving forward. In many cases, projects did not move forward to construction. I'm happy to say that's not so much the case anymore. So the number of request amounts coming in are consistently exceeding the program's resources. I mentioned this, we just ended our 20th round. This was record-breaking in every sense. We had the largest dollar amount in terms of requests in the program's history, but also the largest number of units proposed in the program's history. Looking at what staff have heard rumors of and what we know, realizing that development projects are typically held pretty close to the chest until they're made public, we're estimating in the next couple of years that we're likely to see requests to the program that represent 380 additional affordable housing units, but asking for about $2.3 million. And right now, we only have $430,000 to work with for those requests. And just to give you a sense, this last round, you know, we saw a tax credit project proposed in the waterfront area of the city, one in the village of Trumansburg, and the Immaculate Conception School redevelopment site in the city. So in terms of the business before you tonight, Resolution R would use $200,000 of the county's HUD program income funds over this next 2 years in total. So adding an additional $100,000 per year over these next 2 years to the program. And I'll explain in a moment how this aligns with our partners as well. Resolution S is a little bit more complicated. It proposes creating a contingent fund for low-income housing tax credit projects. When I try to visualize this, I think of this is the way the program can back every racehorse coming out of Tompkins County. So right now, the program struggles to support 1 or 2 tax credit projects per year, but we're consistently seeing 3 or 4 proposed. If we don't have the funds to make awards to all of those projects, we're taking our best guess about who to back that then goes into the state's competitive process. And I will say that the state does not necessarily view the best projects the way a local community might. And so this contingent fund is intended to allow the program to make awards towards 3rd and 4th tax credit projects in a year so that all of the viable projects coming out of this county are as competitive as possible against others in the state when they go to the tax credit award rounds. And that would use $300,000 of the county's HUD program income funds. So in terms of our partners, I mentioned a moment ago, Cornell, I think it was in September, announced that they are committing an additional $100,000 over the next 2 years, so $200,000 in total, to the program, and also stated the intention to renew their commitment for an additional 6 years once the current Memorandum of Understanding expires.
And then, as we heard last night, the city committed an additional $100,000 in its 2020 budget. So this would mean, with Resolution R, this would mean that all three of the current funding partners would have increased their amounts for 2020 at least by $100,000. Other news, it's been a busy year. As you know, the Home Rule Bill passed, and that allows the county to use local funds for affordable housing. The county also applied on INHS's behalf for an Enterprise Foundation grant to expand the Community Housing Trust, which builds permanently affordable for-sale housing in the county. So that's intended to help increase production of those units throughout the county. Then also recently, the American Planning Association's Upstate New York chapter gave an implementation award to the program, recognizing that it's an excellent example of planning being implemented and resulting in a tangible benefit to the community. Efforts have continued to seek new partners, and I should say the program is designed to add partners, and the three partners welcome new parties, whether they're private or public organizations. And anyone interested in that is always welcome to contact our department. In addition, the Program Oversight Committee of the Community Housing Development Fund is establishing a working group, realizing that the program will be expiring in late 2021, to do analysis and make recommendations and really be ahead of the curve to try to keep momentum up in addressing our community's affordable housing challenges. So with that, I will leave you a link to additional program information and contact information if anybody would like additional information on the program. Again, our department provides the day-to-day administrative support, and we're always happy to answer questions, et cetera. And I am happy to take more questions. I'll say I've got more photos if you would like them, but I know you've got a lot on your agenda tonight.
Thank you very, very much, Megan, and congratulations to you and David and the whole department for the implementation award and for really making this program really sing, and we're extremely proud of it. You all have two dense pages in your packet, packet pages 6 and 7, and about the fund and the list of projects, and packet page 8 includes the representatives from Cornell, the city, and the county, and the application review committee, the people who are actually doing the work on these, on the evaluation of these projects. Are there any questions? We'll start out with questions for Megan or Katie. Okay. Well, I would like to then, if we could just take Anna, if you want to take Resolution R, packet page 121, if we can take care of that, these items of business, and then sort of do this all at one time.
Mm-hmm. I would be happy to. Resolution R, commitment of additional Tompkins County program income funds to the Community Housing Development Fund. This is ID 8913. It looks like I don't need to explain anything.
And there's an A on that.
Yes.
All right. A. Second by Lislin. All right. Discussion.
Yay.
Rich.
I'm sorry George McGonigal just stepped out of the room, but I did want to really commend the city for stepping up. I know they had a very difficult budget process, and they certainly demonstrated their commitment and knowledge that this is such an important issue, and that we're able to work together with them and Cornell to do something. The leveraging is really, really impressive. So it's very exciting that we're getting ready to take this step. And, of course, I do want to indicate I will support the motion or the resolution.
Thank you. Anyone else? Megan, if you would send all of us, you can send it to Kathy and she'll forward it, the whole PowerPoint. You do have additional information in there, and that's not in our packet. That's great. And sort of up to the last minute, you know, which is nice. So thank you. Anna?
Are those pictures that the additional slides are? Is that what the additional? Would you mind scrolling through them since we do have a moment?
You can tell me if I go too fast.
Hmm.
it's been pretty successful.
That's beautiful. Thank you for taking the time to do that.
Yeah, it really, you know, so many things that we do, like, you don't, it's sort of intangible. You don't really see the results. Obviously, these results are very real. All right, we're ready to vote on Resolution R. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's wonderfully unanimous. Thank you. And Anne, I want to do the S, the next one.
I would be honored. Commitment of Tompkins County Program income funds for 9% low-income housing tax credit, contingent fund of the Community Housing Development Fund, and this is ID number 8914.
So moved. Second by Annie. Discussion or questions? I was interested in, it seemed like new news when you said that the state is doing a second round of tax credit projects, and it sounds like instead they're not just spreading out the same number of awards. You think they're going to do twice as many awards?
I don't think it's twice as many, but it gives more. So the tax credits are allocated by the IRS and by the federal government. So I don't believe anybody is getting more tax credits. Although I'll say there's another movement nationwide about increasing tax credits across the board. So it's working with what they've got, but it's giving a second opportunity every year, which I think will time better for a lot of developers, and it may also allow us to kind of appear more competitive against, you know, kind of the group that's there in any one time. And oftentimes tax credit projects have to apply multiple times. And so I understand that if you're unsuccessful in one round, the state will be rolling people into the second round for consideration. So we're just, I think between that and the state's indication that they understand that this is a priority area needing a lot more additional housing units, we're hopeful for more projects.
Okay, great. And I would also commend to you the memo that Jason wrote that's in your packet. It goes into a fair amount of detail on all this, and it's also very helpful to understand. Anything else? All in favor of Resolution S, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. That's fantastic. Legislator, the changes, Anna, did you, in our red folders, got it. Okay. There were a couple of small changes. I assume that's what you meant to pass, meant to move, right?
Correct.
All right. And Annie the same. Okay. Very minor changes, but identifying clearly the CDBG money. All right. And then there are a couple of other housing resolutions. Anna, if you, especially so Megan can go home, if in case there are any questions.
Yes.
You want to take those?
P.
Yes.
Negative declaration for authorizing exemption from real property taxes and provision for in-lieu payments with regard to the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Service, Inc., INHS, Immaculate Conception School Redevelopment Project. That's ID 8961. I so move.
And seconded by Deborah. Any discussion? I did have a question about Jay's memo. Hi, Jay. Packet page 114. You mentioned that that there are some pilots. You said likely in error. The City of Ithaca has granted this pilot for the INH scattered sites along with the ISN housing on 4th Street. Is this something that has to be fixed in any way? Or? I'm not sure how that would be fixed, but
I don't think so. I don't want to go back and touch some of those. There's just some confusion with us being a countywide assessing unit, and the law clearly states that the assessing unit is the one who should be granting these sorts of municipally granted pilots. The city could do it, but it would only be on city taxes. So I don't think we would want to go back. If we want to go back and be procedurally correct, but there's also an oddity in the real property tax law. Once an exemption is granted, something needs to be changed in order for it to be revoked. So it's, I think it's good now, and kind of starting now of moving forward and doing it the correct way is fine.
Okay, and so are those projects, do they have the exemptions for pilots for all three jurisdictions then?
Correct, yes. Okay. And the good thing which we found, the reason why the assessing unit should be doing it is they're the ones who know how they should be billed, and hopefully everything will be billed according to what the pilots say.
Okay, great. Anna?
And I just want to make sure, I'm sure this is the case, but all the municipalities and the city are now well aware that it should go through from the from now to the future with you.
The city is aware of it. I haven't related to the town of Ithaca. I think they're the only other ones that did it. But when I'll meet with the new supervisor, I'll let him know of this kind of change if they have a project popping up.
Great. Thank you.
Deborah.
Well, just to be sure that we dot the I's and cross the T's, y'all might have noticed on packet page 117, there were some points on which our DPS disagreed with some of the factual statements and findings in the city's EAF, but overall we still agree with the negative declaration. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor of Resolution P, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. And you want to take Q?
Of course. This is the second part of this. Q is authorize exemption from real property taxes and provision for in-lieu payments with regard to the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, Inc., INHS, Immaculate Conception School Redevelopment Project. I so move.
Second by Leslin. Any discussion? All in favor of Q, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Terrific. We've got a couple of other planning related, but we can do those on the consent in a couple of minutes, if that's all right. And come back to report, Anna. All right? Okay, great. Well, thank you all very much. That's all really good news. For my report, I just have a couple of things. I asked Katie a week or so ago if we'd heard anything back from NYSEG, the airport, and a proposal written with Andrea Aguirre and others in planning, along with Mike Hall and others at the airport, did put in a proposal for a geothermal system at the airport under the NYSEG non-pipe alternative request for information process, and I wondered if we'd heard anything back. And Katie did say that they did have a follow-up call with NYSEG, who said that it was one of the more comprehensive and detailed projects that they received. So that was good news. They're having other follow-up calls. And I guess Katie was hopeful that we would get a significant amount, but the concern seems to be that they may be reducing. If we get something, it probably wouldn't be the $3 million that we have asked for this full system. So, and I did check with Irene Weiser about the petition that we put in, that she put in. One of the items in the petition to the Public Service Commission was questioning the amount of money that would be allocated under the non-pipe alternative program, and that is apparently all going through the rate case. So they're involved in intensive negotiations right now. And the minimum is $10 million. We're hoping, we think there's an argument that it should be $20 million allocated to the moratorium area. But we will see. So congratulations on a good proposal, and we're hopeful that will come in. And then I got from Steve Aquario of NYSAC the list of committees for NACO, the National Association of Counties, and I'll send around the nomination form to list the committees that NACO members can, that legislators can apply to be on their committees at the national level, and I'll send that around when I get a couple more questions answered from him, but assuming that goes through in our budget, that's something that we can look forward to. So that's all I have. If there are no questions,
All right, County Administrator's report, Jason Molina.
I just have two things to report on briefly, and I'll send myself, Amy Hendricks, and Nick Murphy went to Nashville, Tennessee 2 weeks ago to the International City County Management Association. I'll send you a brief overview of some of the different programs we went to. One specifically that was interesting was the first police station in the country that was built as a net zero project. It was outside Cincinnati. It's a pretty interesting project. There's a documentary that went with it. I'll send you a link to a portion of the documentary, but I'll also send out some links to an article or two that kind of talks about the process they went through, the public engagement element to it, which was pretty interesting, just to show you that public safety buildings can achieve those outcomes, and they're very pleased with it. So I thought it was an interesting program. And also send out a little bit of a summary as to what I attended at the conference, just to give you an understanding of it. The other thing I want to update the legislature on is we have three department head searches going on at this point in time. The director of probation interviews took place today. Rich John, Henry Grandison, myself, Lisa Holmes, Barb Dietrich, and Kit Kephart. Deb Dietrich. I have, there's a Dietrich from my former life, who's Barb. I'm sorry. Deb Dietrich, Kit Kephart, have all participated in the interview process, and we'll hopefully have a recommendation out to the legislature by the end of this month, early next month. On the street now are advertisements for the Director of Human Rights as well as the Workforce Development Board. So we hope to have those interviews lined up in December and January. That's all I have.
Thank you, Jason. Any questions? Thank you. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Sure. Just one matter. A few weeks ago, I updated you on the opioid litigation, and one of the things I had mentioned was that there was now a effort to create a national class of all municipalities for the purpose of settling, and that we had just received that proposal. They just got an order from the court, and that we were waiting on our counsel to make a recommendation whether our county should opt in or opt out. In the last few days, we got the recommendation that they think we should opt out. Already, most of the New York municipalities that are members are opting out. The theory is that our council believes that we would get a better and quicker settlement if the group participates just in the New York litigation as opposed to the national litigation. So we are going to follow that advice and join most of the other New York municipalities and opt out. That's all I have to report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Anna.
I remember seeing recently one New York Times article that said that one of the biggest manufacturers settled the day before their Supreme Court case for, I think, $238 million, which is about a building and a half in the city of Ithaca, of the large buildings that are going up, basically not that much money. I wouldn't necessarily go very far to any kind of remunerations or assistance for what has evolved from, you know, overuse of these medications. And I'm curious, is that because there are multiple suits that are coming up, each individually with each of the major manufacturers? If they have already declared bankruptcy, how is a suit going to proceed in New York or the federal? I guess I'm...
Yeah, so you're probably referring to Purdue, which is really the largest manufacturer of opioids.
And that was my concern.
Right, and they have declared bankruptcy, which means that all these proceedings are what they call stayed against them, meaning they can't proceed. So claims against that company would have to be made through the bankruptcy court. In other words, a different proceeding. Like I talked about last time, it's somewhat complicated in that, for example, most of the attorney generals have are in support. New York State and some of the others are not. There's a huge question as to what their assets are. The court has proposed a formula, which is pretty complicated, and different estimates are different by, you know, billions and billions of dollars as to how much money there is would be in this bankruptcy, because it also involves the personal property of some of the owners. So it's a very complicated thing. But in terms of this settlement that we're talking about, or this negotiation, it would not include that company because they're in bankruptcy and it can't.
So that would be a different one?
That would be separate, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Jonathan? All right, thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
Thank you very much. Tonight I'd like to present our sales tax report for September and our casino revenues to date, and then open it up if you have any questions about AIM-related funding, which I sent an email out to all legislatures that describe how our sales tax are being impacted by AIM-related funding to municipalities. So in your packet, starting on page 10, I believe it is, through 13, you can see the tax distribution for the month of September. I also handed this out to each of your chairs there, a one-page summary in my remarks tonight. This summary starts with the sales tax portion, and at the bottom I will explain our casino revenues to date. If you're looking at the sales tax report for September, the September sales tax was down approximately 2.8%. We haven't had many months this year where we've had a negative rate of growth. I think this is only the second month. But we did have a 2.8% decrease comparing this September to past September. If you move over to the right-hand side of the column there to see our year-to-date under county portion, where we are year-to-date, we are at $28,815,912 compared to $27,699,211 in 2018. The year-to-date is still a very positive increase of $1.1 million or 4.03%. So that's where we are at the end of September. If you turn the page and look at the same report for third quarter, this is where we're comparing all 3 months of the third quarter. I can tell you that the tax distributions for the third quarter was up 3% compared to last year. So even with a negative growth in September, we still were up for the third quarter 3% even. And despite September being down, it's our highest third quarter on record, following our highest second quarter and first quarters on record. So far, every quarter this year has been beating last year or any other year previously. If you turn the page to the final two pages, you'll see all the years where we show every single quarter going back to 97 with a breakdown from 2009 to 2019 quarter by quarter. So you can see compared to other quarters how well or how poor we do compared from 1 year to the next. So we provide this information to you on a quarterly basis. Sometimes the municipalities ask for it. We share that with them when they ask. But we are having a good year. And if you go back to either page 10 or 11, if you want to know how close we are doing compared to budget, you can see at the bottom of either page 10 or 11, the sales tax distribution summary, that compared to the gross sales tax budget estimate, we're at 79.4%. Of course, normally after 9 months, we would just be at 75%, but we're at 79.4. If you're looking at just the unallocated sales tax portion, which is what we use in administration to govern our budget for, we're at 78.2%. So we are above budget for sales tax receipts at this point in time. Any questions about this portion of the sales tax report?
Deborah.
So this might be leaking over into the discussion of the AIM impact, but assuming that we stayed on track, with these numbers as they appear on packet page 11, we would still have to take into account the fact that we're going to be minus whatever that AIM payment is as of December 31st, right?
Yeah, with the email I sent to each of you about 2 weeks ago, I'll review that briefly because Deborah brings up a very good point. We are going to be impacted for those AIM payments, and we know what that dollar amount is now, and it's $387,278.
Can you say what AIM payments are for the people at home?
Right, those are... Help me.
Aid incentive to municipalities. It's essentially state aid. Aid incentive to municipalities is what it stands for. It's the state aid that overall the state would provide towns, villages, and cities with about $715 million of state aid annually. And process.
But now we're providing it.
Now towns and villages, the amount that towns and villages are receiving are coming out of county sales tax revenue rather than the state providing it, which in this case the state is now only basically providing the city AIM aid, where this is coming out of our sales tax now for towns and villages.
What I wrote you a couple weeks ago was that it's interesting that, at least from our perspective, that this is the first time that they've come directly to what we consider our local sales tax portion, have taken from that, not asking us, not seeking permission or anything like that, but they've just, at the state level, enacted legislation saying, in effect, well, you're going to be getting more internet sales tax dollars. Remember that discussion while they were passing their budget? First, they cut the AIM funding altogether, and then they brought it back and said, well, we'll pass it on to the counties, let them pay it out of their local portion of sales tax dollars. But at the same time, they were talking about the increase counties were going to get because of internet sales. We do not have that number and probably won't have it until after the first of the year to know just how much has come in since June 1st with the internet sales dollars. But we should begin to think in terms of this, that we don't have one pot of money from internet sales tax and then all the other sales tax dollars. Most counties are beginning to wake up to the fact that, hey, internet sales is all part of our general sales tax. We shouldn't be looking at it as a separate component. In effect, it's money that we should have been getting all along, but it could never be enforced and was never enforced, and now it isn't until this year in that there is a separate internet sales tax that will be tracked by the state. When will we see those dollars and what they amount to? I don't know, but like I said, it'll be after the first of the year. Now, when they passed this funding that AIM-related payments would come out of the county's portion of sales tax dollars, they made it look like, well, we're going to give you more internet sales tax dollars, and then we're going to take some from you for this AIM funding. Well, we don't know if it's a higher amount or a lower amount or the same amount. It's going to be a county-by-county basis. And so we do not know at this point in time if we're going to be better off or worse off, but we do know what the calculation is for this AIM funding, and that's the figure I gave you earlier, $387,278. The first part of that, it's made in two different installments. $311,000 is coming out of our December sales tax allocation. So we know exactly how much will be coming and when to pay these AIM funding requests for funding. $311,000 this December. The remaining $75,000 or $76,000 will be coming out of the May 2020 sales tax. So that's how they're coming to us for funding for these AIM-related payments. My concern and why I pass it on to you, and I have some of you have emailed me questions back and forth, but I think we always have to be concerned when the state begins something new and sets a precedent, and we have to wonder what's going to happen next year, what's going to happen when they choose to not fund some other program that up until now has been a state-funded program, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden they fear they can't pay it. So we'll just pass it on to the county and, again, take it out of their local portion of sales tax dollars. That's very dangerous precedent, and I hate to see what could happen in future years. The other side of it is, why didn't they take it out of the state share of sales tax dollars? I mean that would be the obvious.
It was proposed, I think the governor proposed cutting the AIM funding. The towns, supported by the counties, raised an uproar.
That'll teach us.
Against that, and they said, okay, fine, you pay for it. So I've got Anne and then Henry.
Thank you, Rick. You answered the first part of my question, which is the sales tax increase. I knew that was their rationale. I'm curious, you said we're not even going to know about that until January. Is that the case?
For the internet sales?
How much worry will be getting?
Yeah, if then.
Dave Lucas
was just at our treasurer's group meeting 2 weeks ago and didn't have any numbers for us yet.
So we won't know until then, but that's not that we'll get the money then for 2019.
We have been getting the money. It has been told to us that the internet sales dollars have been already processed and coming to us since June 1st, right up to date.
They're on their way.
So everything that you've heard reported from me for June, July, August, and September have already included increased amounts due to internet sales.
We're seeing that in these numbers, or that's in delivery somewhere and the truck got lost.
Now, you generally don't get a breakdown of sales tax by industry until well after the year's over. So it wasn't until just the past few years that the state taxation and finance started to issue reports on your breakup of sales tax. So in this case, you're starting to get the sales tax revenue from the internet sales. We don't know what the breakup is, and probably January would be great, but probably not until mid-next year. So it's just considered part of your general sales tax.
So it's already in here, and we will be just getting the report of what it is, that is sales
sometime
tax.
Next year.
So then this increase that we're seeing could just be from this artificial that they've added, this thing that they haven't.
I don't think it's just from that, because other indicators of the economy doing well. We know that, like in September, for example, why did it drop down to where it was negative? We know for a fact that with decreased gas sales, the state's put out a figure that there's 7.5% less in decreased gasoline sales. So that attributes to part of that negative increase or that negative growth for September. But like I said, every quarter we've had so far this year has been positive, and we just don't know how much of that might be due to increased internet sales. We talked at the Government Operations Committee briefly on this about, even if they tell you how much your internet sales are, that you have to always look at the fact that that may have come from somewhere else, too. There may be a lessening effect in the fact that, say, they have $500,000 in internet sales, just to throw a number out there. Well, maybe $250,000 of that might have been a decrease in your other retail sales at bricks and mortar stores. So even when they tell us what the internet sales number is, that may not be pure growth. That could have been slid over from some other category.
Right.
So I want you to understand that also. Most treasurers are trying to counsel their boards and their legislators by saying, from here on, moving forward, we shouldn't even be really too concerned about what's internet sales and what's everything else. We should look at our sales tax as a homogenized group. This is what our sales tax dollars are. This is what we have to work with. This is what we have to budget. And I think this whole game on looking at internet sales compared to AIM-related funding payments, I think that was kind of a switcheroo there that was pulled. And we should focus now going forward probably on our total sales tax dollars going forward.
Okay, I have a list of people. But first, I want to say, you're right, just kind of when we do our mental accounting, et cetera, that's fine. However, the policy issue back to the state that says, why are the counties picking up, what has historically been your responsibility? That's another unfunded mandate. And, we're really seeing reversion to a lot of these things. This is a new flavor of unfunded mandate.
I mean, if you take a step further,
state law requires sales tax sharing agreements to be approved by the local municipality. So this is essentially a sales tax sharing agreement mandated by the state. So when a county wants to share sales tax, it's done through a sales tax sharing agreement, usually with cities or the rest of the community. So this is the first time this type of thing's happened. The second piece of the puzzle is your additional sales tax increase has to be approved by the state legislature every
two years.
So that's unprecedented in those two areas. So before, local sales tax sharing was completely the discretion of the counties and the municipalities. That's no longer the case because now it's a mandated sharing of sales tax. Second piece of it is the state legislature is the one that approves your additional 1% of sales tax that you ask for renewal every 2 years. So there's a, you know, that's a dangerous precedent that I think we're all conscious of. How to reverse it, I don't know, but you know, it's just an odd, it's a different precedent than in the past. It's taking a home rule, you know, home rule authority, and essentially de minimizing it.
Right. So, from a fiscal point of view, fine. Don't fuss about it. But from our kind of sense of the policy and talking to the state, I think we really need to pay attention to this to understand when we get the reports finally of what the internet increment is and what the theft is for AIM. I think that should be a NYSAC, a top priority NYSAC issue. I think it will be. I've got Henry, Mike Lane, Deborah, and the Annie.
My question's already been asked.
I'm sorry?
My question's already been asked.
Okay, thanks. Mike?
I'm not advocating this, but some counties don't share their sales tax with their towns and villages. Some share it with things like the school districts as well. Onondaga is a good example of that. Theoretically, I suppose we could change our sales tax agreement and reduce it by the amount of AIM funding that we're giving to the towns and villages, reduce their share, so that we were held harmless from that, and it went back to the towns and villages. Historically, AIM funding was called revenue sharing, and it goes back to the 70s. It was federal revenue sharing to begin with. President Nixon was the one that advocated for that, believe it or not. And then the state said, yes, we'll share some of our income with our municipalities. Then the formulas got to the point where the towns and villages were going to receive pretty substantial funding. And so they stopped using the newer census, and they continued to advocate to have most of the money go to the cities. And even with this shakeup of what's happening with the AIM funding to the towns and villages, the cities are being held harmless. For example, I believe the city of Ithaca gets over $2 million a year in AIM funding. It has no obligation to share that with anybody, or it has not been reduced at all. All of the towns and villages together in the county, I think, had received in AIM funding a little over, $350,000 to $400,000 in that neighborhood. So you take the 30,000 people in the city of Ithaca versus the 70,000 people in all the rest of the county, and you can see the disparity in what is being given revenue sharing to the per capita numbers of people. Don't want to continue to go on like this, but this whole thing has made me very, very irritated. I'm sorry to say that. But we need to, as Martha just said, we need to push back on this at the state level. And we need to let our legislators know, our state legislators know, this is not acceptable.
Deborah.
Thank you for that background, Mike. I think a lot of us, especially the new people, weren't aware of any of that. I just wanted to clarify that although the third quarter figures in your reports include internet sales tax, the first and second quarters do not?
True.
Okay, thank you.
Annie?
So some of my concerns were already raised, but I just want clarification for myself and for
the other municipalities. So when are we going to be paying the AIM fund directly, or is the state is holding money back from our...
The state holds money back, so it doesn't change our accounting in any way, shape, or form. The state basically skims the AIM funding, sends it directly to the municipalities. We are not involved in distributing those AIM-related payments. They skim it right off the top, and then we get our new adjusted gross already has the AIM funds withheld, and then the state sends it to the municipalities.
Okay, so, but still, in essence, we are paying, the county is paying.
Yes.
The AIM funding now. And I also, and I appreciate you sending out this information on that too, but it's very disturbing in many ways to see the state doing this, that they're passing it on to us indirectly and really doing a taking of our sales tax, and we don't even have those figures that they're taking. We don't have the figures that are from internet sales tax, so we can't check those numbers. And so anyway, the whole thing is very disturbing, and I would definitely support trying to send as strong a message or to try to fight this as much as we can, because this is not the trend that I would like to go with our relationship with the state.
Agree. Anna, you had your hand up?
Just one last question. You've brought up home rule multiple times, and it's something that I've thought about, but does this violate those home rule laws, and has there been any discussion about counties and the state?
I can't speak to whether or not it violates home rule law. It's state law. What I can say is there's been some chatter across the administrators in the state that a few board of supervisors or legislative bodies are passing resolutions in opposition to this, which would, to a certain extent, may try to lay down some legal work to challenge it. I don't know how much friction it has or how much momentum it has. It has not been discussed at the NYSEC level. I'm just aware of one resolution I saw that would suggest that they're saying that this is pushing some limits, but I don't see anything right now that would be the case. It's state law, they passed it. I don't know. If that has traction, then we will know at probably the next NYSEC meeting.
Thank you for sharing that previously.
Yeah. Annie.
Thank you. I'm just looking over my notes again here. I had another question. So, Rick, you said in December we're going to have $311,000 taken from our December sales tax but I guess I'm not clear. I thought it has been taken since June. They've been holding back money,
no.
The state. No?
Since June is when we've been receiving the internet sale increases, the extra revenue.
Oh, and they haven't been holding
back. The AIM-related payments are coming out twice a year for a total of that $387,000. The first distribution that comes right off the top will come out of our December sales tax next month. Our December sales tax will be reduced by $311,000. Now, over the whole scope of our sales tax dollars for the year, that's not a significant impact. It's not going to throw us from not making budget or anything, disastrous like that. So it's, from a budget standpoint, it's a hit that we can take. But that's $311,000 less I'll be reporting to you when I report you the December sales tax figures. And then the smaller amount, the $75,000 or $76,000, that's and this is due, I believe, because towns and villages are in different fiscal years, so they make these two different distributions. That won't occur until May of 2020. And so it's those two components together make up this first round of AIM funding.
And so they'll also then be taking our taking 311,000, but also the percentage that would have been distributed of that to the other municipalities, they're also going to see a decrease for December.
Yeah, because it comes right off the top, the amount of sales tax that we have to allocate to everybody, including mm-hmm. ourselves, is all reduced.
Will be less for them, too.
Everybody.
So it is affecting everybody.
If, so it'll.
Taking it away.
They're taking it away from them, essentially, also, from the municipality.
Keep in mind, not every county shares sales tax.
Right, but for our county.
For our county.
For our county.
But they're still going to have to. The counties that don't share, it's still taken away from them and given to their municipalities, right?
It depends on the arrangement with the counties. I mean, one thing that's not clear is that, you know, I would imagine that this is getting a little technical, so we could take it up another time. But, you know, the 311 is coming, it's towns and villages. Well, is that coming from the 1.5% outside the city, which I would imagine it would be, versus the 1.5% coming from inside the city? Is it the 1% that's the whole county? I mean, there's no clarity as to where that revenue. I mean, sales tax is broken down into multiple portions. One would imagine that this is not going to impact the city sales tax because it would be taken out of the 1.5% that's generated outside the city. Nobody knows that. There's questions as to. I think the bottom line is you have X amount for sales tax. This is being pulled out of it.
Yeah, and I mean that slide you always have for the tax cap for how to.
Yeah, the sales tax agreement is like even more complicated.
The sales tax slide is even worse. So this is just add another layer. I mean, one of the things that has bothered me for a long time is that they have to know where the money comes from. I mean, and it's only recently, as you said, when they reported to us that such and such was from fuel and such was from real estate, whatever, you know, from different categories, energy. They have to know today, you know, how much is coming from the internet. And yet we're not going to find out till next year sometime. So,
probably after the first of the year, but yeah.
And then also that some counties, as you said, who knows how much they might not get as much internet as they would have to pay out in AIM. So this is really a Rube Goldberg that is such a profoundly terrible idea. However, a little worried that the horse has left the barn. So I'm sure NYSEC will put this on their list of grievances, and the list gets long. Was there anybody else? Is there? I mean, I know that this will be part of the discussion in January at NYSEC. Jason.
One thing I want to point out, not alarming, but it is an interesting coincidence that we will be following over the course of the next month and a half and maybe report out in December. Occupancy tax decreased in September compared to 2018 and for the month of September. You also had the same decrease in sales tax for September compared to 2018. Your third quarter in the Lago revenue was about equal to 2018. It may be a coincidence, but it's somewhat odd that you would have a decrease in those two contributors in terms of revenue. If it continues into October and into November, then it might be something to be a little bit more concerned about, and you might start to see this might be the beginning signs of change in things economy-wise. It's worth noting that we'll monitor it over the course of the next month and a half and 2 months, and if October shoots up again, it's just a blip for whatever reason. Doesn't necessarily mean anything right now, but 2-3 months under your belt of a similar trend would suggest something different. It's just something that came up the other day as we were going through different numbers with occupancy tax and sales tax, and then looking at the DeLago numbers. There's a coincidence that September, all three of them saw some flattening or decrease. So we'll keep an eye on it. In December, we'll report out to see what the October numbers look like, and the September and the November numbers eventually in January.
Thanks for spreading the joy, Jason.
Just want to make sure you're fully informed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Rick, something else?
I was just going to review those casino receipts with you at the bottom of that one-page summary. Year-to-date, or for the first quarter, let's see. The third quarter, as Jason said, we were only up 0.2%. This compares to a 6.8% increase for the first quarter, a 9.3% increase for the second quarter, which leaves us year-to-date receipts up 5.3%. So the casino revenues, which I am not responsible for, I'll have you on record for that. We still have somewhat of an increase in each of the three quarters. If you look at the first column for 2019, we're currently at $1.5 million with three quarters reported. Our budget for the year was $1.2 million. So we've already surpassed our budget goal.
So, again, the wisdom of budgeting conservatively. Yes, absolutely. Anything else for Rick? All right. Well, before I do the consent agenda, Kathy, you want to roll up the screen?
Sure.
Okay. Resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. All right. Holler if you want anything taken off of consent. Resolution A, in support of federal legislation that requires the Office of Management and Budget to reclassify public safety telecommunicators as a protective service occupation, ID 8952. Resolution B.
Off.
Okay. Resolution C. Authorizing supplemental agreement number 18 with CNS companies for consolidated shared-use fuel facility and Avgas self-service fuel facility design and bidding services, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8941. Resolution D, authorizing acceptance of a New York State Department of Transportation grant for terminal building improvements, rehabilitate taxiway A and C, and purchase multitasking snow removal equipment, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8939. Resolution E, resolution authorizing a public hearing in accordance with Section 147F of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, ID 8935. Resolution F, acceptance of grant from the Park Foundation to continue to provide consultant services to business clients through the current Business Energy Advisors for New Construction Program, ID 8960. Resolution G, amendment. G is off.
For your amendment.
Okay. Oh, okay. Does that have to be off for that? Okay. Resolution H, authorizing a public hearing on local law number blank of 2019, a local law establishing a 5-cent paper carryout bag reduction fee. Paper carryout bag reduction fee. Thinking about the line. In Tompkins County, ID 8996. I'm just stuck on the phrasing of that, but okay.
State law, Martha.
What?
It's the state law.
Okay. It's the state law. Resolution I, resolution calling on the governor and state legislative leaders to provide counties with permanent local authority over their over their existing sales tax rates, ID 8919. Resolution J, resolution to consider applications for funding from the Municipal Housing Affordability Grant Program for Round C, 2019, ID 8958. And I have no appointments. Motion on the consent agenda. Moved by Anna, second by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. All right. Start with the Census Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
The complete Census Count Committee met on November 4th. We were joined by Kate Dillon from the Census Bureau, who gave us an update on the recruiting efforts for census workers for Tompkins County. As you know, they'd like to hire a couple of hundred for these part-time workers. Compared to surrounding counties and other counties in the region, we are far behind in applications for those jobs. And they're a little concerned about that, naturally. If you think about it, you go into all the stores lately and you see signs up hiring, taking applications, et cetera. I think we are, there's a shortage of part-time workers right now because it's a symptom of our economy doing well. But there's something that's going on. So if you know folks who would like some of these census jobs going around their own neighborhoods, for example, part-time, please get them to apply to the Census Bureau. They are going to hire some folks, even if they are non-citizens, as long as they're legal residents, who have language skills and may be able to help with folks that can't speak particular languages in the area. So if you know somebody who'd like one of these part-time jobs, who has a language skill, can help with folks that help the folks that can't speak English work to answer their questions online, they can also apply for these jobs. Pat Pryor joined us. She's been out from the Public Information Advisory Board. She's back at it, and they'll be having a meeting on the 18th with some new folks that have joined that board to help us figure out how we can get even more word about the census coming out to them. We also discussed the idea of putting up some large banners around town, such as we've seen in the past for Reading Partnership and other things like that. And we've been received an offer from Ithaca College, their print shop up there, to be able to help us at a very reasonable cost to produce these banners. That's all I have.
Thanks very much, Mike. Any questions for Mike? Thank you. Great report. Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, Chair.
We have not met since the last legislature meeting, and the meeting for November has been canceled.
All right. Any questions? Thank you, Glenn. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you. The Public Safety Committee met on October 17, 2019. We had a series of reports. I wanted to mention a couple different things. One is the Public Safety Building Conditions Assessment update we got from the county administrator. That process is going on to determine the scope of the review we're going to be doing on the building, and that's underway. I also just wanted to give an update to the legislature that we have the bail reform and the discovery changes that are going to start January 1st. These are really profound changes to how the criminal procedure is working. We got a good report from our district attorney and from Lance Salisbury, our director for assigned counsel, on how they're coming along with that, as well as probation. But it's a pretty far-reaching change in the way criminal charges will be processed. There's a lot of work going on. And fortunately, the plan is to try to get the discovery processes into place and working this year. So we have a pretty good sense January 1st on how those are going to operate. We're in much better shape, I hope, and I think, than a lot of our neighboring counties. And we obviously, as you know, we made some changes in our budget to reflect those requirements that are coming. And listening to the discussion of AIM funding, this is another area where the state has made changes and passed those costs on to us. Hopefully we will do it in a fairly efficient way. So more to come there, but I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of that. The other item I wanted to just talk about for a minute, because this has been an ongoing project of the legislature, and I go back to our vote in 2017 for our 2018 budget to substantially increase the amount of money we were devoting to alternatives to incarceration. And this was in anticipation of losing our waiver at the jail, going from 100 beds down to 81. And we were afraid that we would have a tremendous number of board outs. And we thought, based on the study we had from CGR, that we could do better in terms of managing people outside of the jail and making sure they're getting services there, that they are being monitored appropriately so that they were not held in our jail at greater cost to the county. The September numbers, so this is all the lead up to just mention our September numbers, we had 25 open beds.
Yeah. Woohoo!
That is a substantial success. Now, of course, this is something that can change. Our jail could fill up again, but it does appear this is continued for a substantial period of time, that we have had exceedingly low numbers of board outs to other counties. For a period of time, we were taking board ins. The Department of Corrections is, for some reason, not encouraging us to take board ins now, but we have open beds, and this is, I think, due to the work we did in setting up the alternatives to incarceration, and then the incredibly hard work of all the people that are actually running those programs and making a difference. So I share that. We're going to meet again November 21st at 3:30 here in Chambers.
Thank you, Rich. Annie? Sorry.
So I just wanted to, I don't know if you had spoken before to the legislature about the proposed satellite office in Enfield.
No, but certainly share. I believe study of that is underway. Has there been a decision made to actually do it?
No, but there was a public hearing last night, so I just wanted to share that in the town of Enfield. And the response was almost entirely positive about having a satellite office there. And the only negative comment was that worried about that this was going to be a person or an officer that was going to be possibly in the schools, and if it was going to be an officer in the schools, this person was against it. But other than that, people were very positive about it.
I would just add, one of the real advantages of having a satellite office there is that you can station a car there. A deputy would report to work to that location and start their shift from there. They would do a video participation in the briefings, but they would not have all of the travel time to cross from the sheriff's department all the way over to Enfield. So you save about a half an hour or so at the beginning and end of the shift.
Right, and so also this, just to let people know, this was something that was brought up by the some folks in the town of Enfield requesting this because they have some office space and they have a place for a car to be, and they would just like more presence there versus just being called out, you know, having somebody come out, whether it's the state police or our sheriff's department, when there's something going wrong. They would like more of a presence there to help protect people in that area. And I also spoke with the Town of Ulysses board about this, and they were also very positive because then this would also get an officer closer to the Town of Ulysses and also Newfield.
Les, I'll go to you in a second. Was your question about this issue?
Or? You know, I have a question. I have a comment.
About this or some? I just have a question.
Report.
Okay. All right, go ahead. I have a question about the Enfield. Okay. So this doesn't mean somebody's going to sit in the office at the Enfield Town Hall.
No, it would be a staging place for the vehicle. And presumably, to be polite, there's a restroom there. So they would be stopping in, but it would be a point to go patrol from.
Okay, so they're still on the road. Got it. Okay, thank you. Leslin?
Thank you. Rich, thank you for that report on our alternatives to incarceration program and the difference we believe that it's making. Tompkins County certainly has been a leader in alternatives to incarceration programs for years and years and years. But I also want to add just a little something, if you'd allow me, that there are, we approach these things in a holistic way. I think of the work we've done with Ban the Box, which is contributing to that as well, the reentry program, our job training program, and the fact that our local employers are hiring, and also that people are more and more paying folks wages that they can live on and don't have to, you know, look to other means to supplement income and to support their families. So even the living wage movement here in this county, we're not fully there yet, but there are a lot of employers who are jumping on board and making sure people are paid a decent wage. So I do want to put all of that together, saying in addition to alternatives to incarceration, the fact that we choose to invest, you know, expertise and money and these other things really do help the whole picture. So thank you for that. I also want to emphasize those as well.
We'll go to Anne and then come back to Rich.
I just actually thank you, Leslyn, for bringing that up. I wanted to add one actual additional piece to what Leslyn said, and this is just a report out. In a recent COC meeting, continuum of care meeting, we got a report on the increased number of people in the shelters. They have said that they have increased numbers of people who are families. They've got increased numbers of individuals, increased numbers of people with mental health issues, substance abuse issues. Every single category they've had an increase. They have over 100 people a night right now. And the most disturbing was that they also have an increased number of people in the shelter that are employed. And that includes people who are earning $17, $18, $19 an hour, which is significantly above even what the living wage is in this county, with the cost of housing locally being one of the major reasons that they have not been able to find housing, despite the fact that they are working. So I do want to add that to what Leslyn said, that graciously added that part. It's something we all need to keep in mind. The wraparound needs to be comprehensive.
Rich?
I was going to say something very similar to what Anna mentioned, that we've really made a difference in a lot of people's lives. And I'd also mention that we have reduced our jail population without raising our crime rate, that we are not seeing more crime as a result of the policies we've undertaken. But what we are seeing is that the obstacles, we've addressed a lot of obstacles and reduced a lot of obstacles, but there are some that are really significant, and housing is one of them. I like to think that we don't have a housing crisis in Tompkins County. We have crises, and because there's really different populations that have different housing needs, such as, say, senior housing, affordable housing, workforce housing. But we also have the housing for people coming out of our jail and people coming out on parole from prison, where if you really want to address the next level of recidivism, we need to make sure those people have housing, that if they don't have housing, there's so many opportunities for them to reoffend and end up back in our system. This is not easy by any means. We've done some really good work, but boy, do we have more to do.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, and there's a coordinated assessment list that we're all housing, all the nonprofits collaborate and have one coordinated list for people who come, who reach any of them needing housing. There's, I think, 300 some on that list, something like 70 or 80 are coming out of prison or jail. On the current list of people who have identified as needing housing. So you're all right. I mean, we want to celebrate the fact that when CGR gave its report to us, was that 2017? And they said, not only do you not need to build additional cells, your population is going to go down. We're like, you're crazy. Like, wait, did they write that correctly? We were in such a mindset over many years of having to deal with overpopulation. And so we've done even better than they projected. Absolutely done better than they projected. But it's all connected. And the fact that we supported the housing fund tonight, and in particular the contingent fund that is really going to be targeted for the lowest income and supportive housing, is really critical. Unfortunately, all this stuff takes a lot of time.
But it's really great news that folks aren't in jail. That's not where they should be housed, but we need to create the right kind of housing for them. Thank you, Rich. Anything else on public safety? All right. Thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you very much, Martha. I have a resolution that I would like to move. I did pull it off of the consent agenda because there were some changes. If everyone could look in their red folder, we have some additions. I'd like to thank Anna Cullis as well as Annie Corman for the additions. Resolution number B, I would like to move document 8955, authorizing a public hearing on local law number blank of 2019, a local law amending Article 26, Office of Human Rights, Human Rights Commission of the Tompkins County Charter.
Seconded by Anna. So you want to describe a little bit about the changes. We've got them in blue and yellow, right?
Yes. So initially this resolution here is to announce that we will have a public hearing that will take place November 19th, 2019 at 5:30 here in the legislative chambers. And some of the changes that we made are on packet page 16. We changed that section C26.01, Director of Human Rights Powers and Duties. B, receive and respond to inquiries regarding human rights. And then we did just add a few words for clarity's sake. On packet page 17, we changed where it's C26.02, conduct studies and surveys. On letter E, we added investigate as may be needed. And then on G, that point, we added justice and respect for human rights. If you go to C26.03, Human Rights Commission, under A, fostering understanding and respect, we added for human rights in Tompkins County. B, encourage equality, discourage discrimination, we added advocate for fair and equal treatment. And then we did add the commission as part of C26.05 to section A. We added commission twice. We added for B, refer complaints of alleged discrimination to the office. And then we added G, advise the director of the Office of Human Rights on operations of the office. And then we added I, upon approval of the county legislature or the relevant standing committee of the Tompkins County Legislature, raise and or disperse funds that are not included in the office's departmental budget and are necessary to support the work of the commission.
Anna?
I would ask Jason if he could just explain the last one, I. Since most advisory boards don't have budgets.
Yes. This is really about, under the state law, the commission itself is allowed to accept funding, donations, those types of things, and raise funds. Unlike there's contradictions to other parts of state law that does not allow municipalities to raise funds. So this is a carve out in I think it's Article 12D that allows human rights commissions to raise funds. In this case, the context that this question has been asked is when they do something like the human rights dinner, the annual dinner, the ability to sell tickets, which may generate revenue. That revenue, you know, they can participate in that process, and that revenue can be used to support the program. It does not, you know, this is not an authorization for the commission itself to spend any money. They have no authority to spend the money. Any money, whether it's generated through the budget process that you allocate, or whether it's done through a gift that they're given,
or whether it's done through a sale of for an annual dinner like that, that is all county funds at the end of the day, which is subject to county procurement practices. This just allows the commission to accept funds or raise funds for those types of events.
So accept but not spend, and if they wanted to spend, then they would have to bring a resolution to a committee? Is that,
There's no authority for the commission to spend money. It would go through the office itself.
Right? Okay.
But no advisory board can spend, has the authority to spend money. It has to be allocated either by the legislature or it has to be done through the office.
Great. Well, but it says disperse funds.
Yeah. That's my confusion.
Upon approval of the legislature or the standing committee, raise and or disperse funds.
So under state law, it says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, the Human Rights Commission could do that. Under state law, they do not contemplate that there's also a Human Rights Department, which is a separate source of funding under a county, in our county, but not in most other counties. So in meeting with them, they were most concerned about, for example, the Human Rights Dinner, which hasn't been had in years, but has in the past. So what we, after much discussion, agreed that for particular things, upon approval of the committee or the legislature, they could raise money as permitted by the state law, but would have to come to the legislature for the committee approval.
So can that be added to this where it says raise and or disperse funds upon approval by the legislature?
Well, that's the beginning of the sentence.
It says that. The first part of it, upon approval of the county legislature.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, there it was.
So
it would come back. Okay.
So that takes care of that. Okay. Leslin?
Well, it still doesn't take care of it for me. I'm trying to understand disperse funds to whom. And if I understood what you said correctly, Jason, it will be to the office.
Yes.
So the office can carry that out. So would it be okay to add disperse funds to the Office of Human Rights? Because disperse funds just say it can go any place right now.
I understand your question. If I read the, I'm going to read the whole section again just to. Upon approval of the county legislature or relevant standing committee of Tompkins County Legislature, raise and or disperse funds that are not included in the office's departmental budget and are necessary to support the work of the commission. The ability to raise funds or disperse them has to come from the legislature first.
Understand that.
Okay.
But what you said earlier is what I'm going back to.
Okay.
Is that they wouldn't be the ones spending. The commission would not be the one spending
Correct.
The funds, although it is for the work of the commission
Yes.
that the office will be spending the funds. And so I was asking, can we clarify in there Okay. that disperse to the office?
The actual transaction itself would happen through the office.
Through the office.
Yeah. Yes.
I was just asking for that clarification, and if there's a way to make that clear that that's where it will occur,
okay.
That would be helpful. I have other questions as well.
I do. I mean...
Microphone, please.
Sure. I mean, so what they were looking for and wanted and sort of what we suggested is that, you know, I put it, say, in the context of the Human Rights Dinner. They want to do that, and they want to be able to raise money and use it for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And they would then come, rather than having any sort of broad you know, you can do what you want. They would come to the committee or to the legislature and ask. I don't think, and as Jason says, very likely what would happen is we would set up an account in the Human Rights Department where the money would go and, you know, money would come out of that. But I think it would be best to leave and the authorization broad so that the committee or the legislature can authorize whatever they want with respect to the particular thing. I mean, that's the particular thing we mostly had in mind when we were talking,
right.
But it could be other things, and it just sort of leaves broad, but it still has to be upon approval of the legislature.
So I have absolutely no problem with what you said there, except for the broad part of it. If the monies are going into the department budget, which is where it will go, then the disbursement of the funds will be through the department, not through the commission. Or are you saying that the commission is coming to the legislature and to the committee to ask for authority to spend the money out of the department budget? Is that what this is saying? The commission will come, not the department.
Well, it depends on who comes. It doesn't deal with who comes. It says that it must be on approval. Obviously, it can be either one that comes, whether it's the commission or the department. Mm-hmm. But the approval would be for the commission to raise money or disperse money. I think it unlikely that you would want them to disperse money other than through the department budget?
They wouldn't be able to. I mean, they don't have any authority as a purchasing agent. Mm-hmm. No commission member has the ability to process a payment. Finance department wouldn't sign off on it. You know, there wouldn't be they could. I understand what you're asking for. You want to confirm, if I understand you correctly, that the only way funds are dispersed or goods or services are procured is solely through the office to ensure that it doesn't happen outside of that.
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
I want to suggest the language.
A long time.
Yeah, I think we got Henry and Anna. If I can just, I think the language is just not really great here.
I have an amendment. That's why I raised my hand. So
I'll just finish my one thought. Throughout the charter, it does not identify who does purchasing and who doesn't do purchasing. As an advisory committee, they have no ability to purchase or procure services. So I guess my point is there's no way they can do it otherwise. They can't spend county funds. They have no authority to do it. The actual transaction of the procurement happens through the office.
Okay. Henry, do you have a... Same issue?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm wondering, in terms of doing a human rights dinner, like, for example, securing a hotel room for it, does that come through commission or does that come through the office?
It has to come through the staff. I mean, the staff is the only one that can secure that. I mean, the director of the staff is the only one that can secure a facility, could make reservations, could provide down payments or procure funds for services, or procure services with public funds. There's a hotel or a hall that's going to want a reservation is going to require someone from the organization to sign off on it, which would, the only person that has the authority to do that is the staff, either a director or their designee, which would be an employee.
And for them to sell tickets, they would, how would that work?
Selling tickets, you would have to set up a mechanism in where there would be a safeguard for receipt of the funds. That, again, would be done through the office. You would have to set up a procedure with the finance office as to how tickets would be sold, how funds would be maintained, and then secured and transferred over to the finance office to be deposited in the county account.
If there's another natural disaster and people give them money, mm-hmm. or want to donate money to the Human Rights Commission, how would that happen?
It could be donated, but it's going to be accepted. It's going to be accepted by the county. We would probably have to have some discussion and probably ensure that it's set in a designated, set aside for this purpose. But it's going to be received and held by the county.
Yeah, I know this was controversial, debated greatly during the commission, but I'm just trying to think of what's the real need for this clause.
It's parallel with the state law.
Yeah, I guess from their point of view, it's something that's allowed under state law, and why should they not have it? And my provision of said, well, if approved by the legislature, I suppose the real problem seems to be with the and or disperse part, not the raise part. So, certainly the raise part, I mean, if they want to sell tickets and things like that, for something specifically approved by the legislature, The dispersed part, I mean, clearly, you know, the mechanism would be through the department. You know, an account would be established in the department. Money would be come out of the department.
I think we understand the issue and the process. So, I think the language doesn't
We could just cut out the and or disperse. I think that would
Well, let's see what...
I have an amendment.
Yeah, let's see what Anna says. We've got Amanda, Shauna, and I want to come back to Leslie for other issues, right?
Thank you.
Okay. Anna, go ahead and see what you got.
We have no problem with the raising. They can receive. They just can't disperse. So my suggestion, an amendment, is to remove the and or disperse. So it just says raise funds that are not included in the office's department budget and are necessary for support to support the work of the commission. And then a subsequent statement sentence that says all funds raised will be dispersed through the Office of Human Rights. It just acknowledges the technical mechanism in place, so it's explicit. It's really clear, simple.
I would like to say that sounds good. I would like to say will be administered by the office, which includes tracking, receiving, etc.
That's fine.
So
I'm going to repeat that. Take out and or dispersed and add a sentence that says all funds raised will be administered through the Office of Human Rights or by the Office of Human Rights.
All right, Leslie, does that work for you? Okay.
Is that friendly?
All funds raised will be administered by the Office of Human Rights. Okay, that's
Shauna and myself.
That's friendly.
Yep.
Okay.
Friendly to me.
Got it, Kathy. All right, Dan. Amanda, you're okay. Let Shauna there's something about this, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I spoke with a few of the members from the commission, and I think the one thing that was really important to them was the fact that there were some funds that they had collected a few years ago that perhaps are still lingering, and they do in fact want to make sure that it goes into an account and that those funds can be used for future activities. So I think by doing this, it allows a safe mechanism so that they're not responsible for the funds. We'll take over that part, and then whenever they need money, they would follow the process here.
And I spoke to several members saying if there's an outstanding account with funds, the funds should be turned over to the county. We'll put it in the side account.
That's great.
Well, where are they now?
I don't know.
Okay.
Leslie, back to you on, you had other things?
Yes, ma'am. Is there a companion? I know you said there's an understanding and what state law dictates, but is there going to be a companion piece to this or some more explanation with understanding what raising funds entails, what they can do or cannot do, rather, to raise funds? So raising funds on behalf of the county, because they're a commission of the county, an advisory board of the county, municipality is not allowed to do that. So how are our commissioners going to have a better understanding of that and also more information around, you know, not making any promises or anything to anyone for monies given, that kind of stuff?
So there's nothing specific in the state law that talks about what is the defined definition of raise, you know, to raise funds. And the way this is written, it would require the county legislature to approve whatever it is that they want to raise funds for. So I think that kind of allows you the authority to determine what it is that they would raise and participate in. Obviously, I would assume it has to be related to human rights. It can't be something not related to human rights. So I think that there is no clear, I mean, there's no definition that says this is what the word raise funds means. Accepting of gifts or grants is something you get, you know, without asking or requesting. So, you know, the county can get grants as it applies for it and can receive gifts. If those gifts have certain parameters on them that, you know, in terms of the way the fund, though those gifts can be dispersed or used, then we would follow the criteria that comes with those gifts if you choose to accept the gifts. Does that answer your question?
No.
Okay. Sorry.
Thank you, though.
Are you looking at
all of that?
Okay.
My question is there going to be an educational piece, particularly around
gifting and promises related to gifting. If, as a commissioner, somebody wants to give me something, $100,000, and I say in return we can name a room in the Human Rights Office in your honor.
Sure.
Education piece that goes with that is what I'm asking, because we have certain rules and stuff around. I'm not saying anybody here would do that. I just like things to be clean.
I think we can definitely provide some guidance to the commission about what happens if someone wants to bring forward a gift.
There you go.
And what to do with that.
Thank you very much. I have two other quick things.
Yeah, I think some kind of memo that really explains this piece in particular. Yeah,
and we'll talk about this some more.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks. Go ahead.
G, under that same section, advise on the operations of the office. Can someone tell me what was the thinking behind that or what you mean by that? For example.
That was language, I think, that existed prior to this.
Yeah. So why is it highlighted? I thought that was stuff that was added.
I thought
G is highlighted from on mine.
Yeah, that's what Shauna said, it was. So I just wondered what was the thinking behind advising and the operations. What does that mean?
It's highlighted in our original packet.
Oh, agenda packet. We haven't even gotten to these ones, Andy.
No.
A whole other round.
There's some discussion. I think it previously said that, advise, and they said advise on what? I mean, what would they advise? And try to kind of divide, where it has advised the legislature on issues involving human rights.
Got that.
And then, that what would they advise the human rights, the Office of Human Rights on? And because it was, basically, I think it felt odd that they would advise the Office of Human Rights on human rights, that they would advise them basically on, the implementation and operations of the office, that kind of thing. Of course, it's just providing advice rather than the more general providing of advice to the legislature, which would be on issues of human rights. Because, we discussed in the legislature that, the role being, and we discussed with them as well, their role being to provide advice to the legislature and advice to the department, said, what sort of advice and what would we advise? And the legislature, so we kind of divided them, the legislature, on issues involving human rights, and the office, because it would seem more appropriate, particularly them, on operations rather than on human rights, because presumably the office would not need advice on human rights.
So I'm just trying to get an example of what that means. What would be an operation of the office be that the commission would advise on?
I
like what?
I can give some examples, and for example, over time, what different employees do, what the role of different employees would be, for example, emphasis on public relations versus investigation, that kind of thing. To give advice, obviously it's just advice. The department would still have that ultimate decision. But I think that would be a good example. Okay. And in fact, that's kind of coming up.
Okay. Thank you. I have one last thing.
Okay, go ahead. And then,
Sean, I'll be done. I promise. Well, maybe. On section C-2604, term, appointment and term. I remember conversations around the number of members of the commission, and we're going to leave it at 15 because there was lots of conversation about how difficult it was to find 15 people and quorum was an issue. But it seems like that's not my question. My question, it just says legislature, for a 3-year term you're appointed and maybe reappointed. There are no limits to how many terms you can be appointed, which is
no.
You can be there forever.
Right, and that provision has not changed. And we had much discussion, not really with them so much, but before that, before the members were selected on how many there should be, the terms should be, mm-hmm. and basically the group decided, to leave it as it was. But that wasn't really a conversation we had with the commission, other than to tell them that we, there was discussion of that.
But the current group is appointed, some for 1 and some for 2 years.
That was just to create staggering.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's just to create.
Okay, so is that clear?
It's not, and it wouldn't be in here. That was just because you repopulated the commission.
Okay.
Thank you.
That wouldn't be in here.
Okay. Thank you.
All set, Leslin?
Sort of.
Sean and then Henry.
So, Leslin, I also had similar concerns on G, advice of the Director of the Office of Human Rights, and I wanted to make sure that it wasn't perhaps saying something that we weren't intending here. And I wanted to just, I guess, float the idea, instead of advise, would provide support and feedback to the Director of the Office of Human Rights on operations of the office be a better fit?
I just wanted to
know
what operations,
what's an example? Okay. Okay, great. And then I just wanted to clarify, too, on the terms. We do have in this that they're going to be 3-year terms. Since everyone started so late on this commission and didn't get started till May, we're going to renew everyone's term for a single year. And then people that will have 1-year terms will have an additional 1 year as of January 1st. People that have 2 years will have 2 years, and people that have 3 years will have 3 years. Just so that it's fair. It wouldn't have been fair if people would have just had 6 months.
Okay, Henry?
Yes, I'm looking at the old charter, and it says 26.03, that the commission shall, and it says, serve as an advisory board to the office and to the Tompkins County Legislature. There's nothing about serving to advise the director on the operations of the office. So we want to maybe...
Leslin, I can't hear you. You're whispering to him. Okay. And we can't take account of what you said because.
Yeah, I mean, it just says to advise that it would act as an advisory board to the office, as opposed to direct, advise on the operations of the office.
All right. So is that a suggestion to take out? Operations of the office?
Well, I just want to turn it over to Jonathan and Jason. I mean, because they negotiated this.
I don't think there's a difference between that Section C and Section G. I mean, an advisory board of the office is advising the office itself. I personally, my personal opinion on this is that section of 206, that 26, you know, 03, right. is the same thing as F and G, and you don't need F and G. But that's just my personal opinion. They're advising, they're an advisory board to the legislature, and they can advise the office as well. It doesn't give them the authority to do anything. They're advisory in nature. So I think it's the same thing. It's just worded a little differently. I think it's redundant, to be honest with you.
I mean, 2603 is the sort of definition of the commission. Then 05 is roles and responsibilities. I mean, yeah. I don't think there's any harm in repeating it, but it's a little bit of a different section.
I don't think there's any difference between the two of them, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anna?
I guess, final point on that, I agree that it's repetitive. I appreciate what Martha just said, that it is, they are different sections. My concern more is the commission's understanding of what these are, and is your understanding that they basically mean the same thing, your experience of how the commission read this? So it's more of the interpretation that I'm curious of based on, I wasn't there in the conversations. Yeah. I'm curious from the conversations you had, if there was interest in adding these because they felt it meant something different to them.
I,
I can't speak as to how they're going to interpret it now or in the future, or what they, you know. I can tell you that advising the director and advising the office, in my mind, is very similar. Advising the legislature, either way, it's advice. They have no authority to require it. It doesn't give them any authority. All that they can say, you know what, we were advising you that you should use a different color stationery, and the director can say, thanks, but no thanks.
Even the orange.
You know, I mean, I think it's...
I hear what you're saying. It's irrelevant. It's how it is
irrelevant
written.
Language, and if it makes them feel better, then okay. I don't know that it gives them any authority to do anything over the office. So
that's not my yeah. point. My point more is that I would like to, as much as possible, continue on a very positive note, positive footing. So we are a group of people in the room reading it in one way, and what you said is 100% true, for sure. So it's just a sense of, for those who have been in those meetings,
sure,
are we
sure.
all on the same page? That was all the point of the question.
I mean, I think they just view the advice that they give the legislature as different than the sort of advice they give the office, and thought they should be divided out. We didn't really see it as significantly different.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Henry.
So they could, under either clause, advise on staffing issues, for example, but the director gets us to ignore their comment.
Sure. Okay. I would relate it to this. The Water Resource Agency has advised you on what you should do for hiring staff related to water quality issues. You took it under consideration. We thank them very much for their effort, and we move in a direction. I would relate that to the same thing.
Okay. So I think this time has been well spent, so we understand and make sure what we have in here, what we'd like, because if we have a public hearing and then come back and make changes later, we probably have to have another public hearing. So do we have everything that we want to have in this draft? Anna?
So there were other amendments made, Annie's and mine.
Yeah, those are included, right? You've got in your red folder.
Just want to make sure everybody that it was... Everybody's aware.
So those are this form here that have on the top in pen proposed changes submitted.
Okay, and tonight on the floor we've made the one change about administering the funds dispersed. So, all right, we're ready to vote on the public hearing, Resolution B. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Thank you. So we'll have a clean copy sent, and Shawnee said you were going to send that to the commission so that they have everything.
I'm happy to do that.
Notice of the public hearing. Sure. All right. Do you have anything else on your report? And then we'll take a break, but I'll finish up your report.
Okay. Yeah. Also want to announce that we had our meeting with the Board of Health and the Community Services Mental Health Board Monday, where Jason and Amy gave the presentation for the Public Health and Mental Health Task Force. Both boards were in attendance and asked quite a few questions. There were some concerns among some of the members there, and I would like to thank Jason and Amy for all the time that they've spent. We have been meeting every other week since May for anywhere from 2 to 3 hours. Also, there were 3 members of the Mental Health Board and 3 members of the Board of Health that volunteered to be part of this task force. So there's been a lot of time invested in this project, and the meeting that Jason will give the presentation for the findings of the task force will be Thursday, November 14th at 1 p.m. here in the legislative chambers. That will be our special Health and Human Services Committee meeting. We will also be joined by members of the Board of Health as well as members of the Community Services Mental Health Board. There will be public comment prior so that people that have concerns or questions can speak during that period. And Jason will do the full presentation on the task force findings. For legislators, if there are any questions about the process, about the actual findings, please feel free to ask myself, Jason or Amy. And the full presentation, if you can't make it to the HHS meeting, the full presentation will be the exact same and will occur Tuesday, December 3rd in our legislature meeting. I've also encouraged people that have comment to come to that meeting too so that everyone can hear those comments. If people are not comfortable with public comment, they can always write our email, legislature at tompkins-co.org, and we will all receive those emails. And again, just wanted to thank the administration. They've been really, really helpful navigating through this process. Also wanted to make an announcement that Code Blue is in effect right now. If people are in need of housing during the day, we ask that they go to DSS Monday through Friday. And in the evening time, they can go to St. John's, which is located on State Street, and through Code Blue and the state, housing will be provided, shelter services. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Shauna. Henry?
Shauna, can you maybe give us just a sense of what the concerns of the two boards were?
Yeah, I mean, there was a real concern from the beginning that mental health services would get the short end of the deal. That was certainly my concern entering into this task force. I think we all recognize that in our community, mental health, there's some oversight, and there's a shortage of providers. And one thing that we see in every single population, it doesn't matter if you're rich, if you're poor, if you're living on the streets, if you're housed, people are really struggling with mental health. And so the people of the board members really had concerns that by integrating or merging mental health and public health, that mental health would not receive the attention that it needs. And in our discussions and talking about an integrated model, I think what really came to the forefront that, if anything, that we could actually focus on mental health. And I don't want to get into the specifics because it could really be a long discussion. But we looked at everything from client feedback to staff feedback. We looked at our turnover numbers. We looked at, we interviewed staff. We talked with the different counties that have already implemented the merger, that have merged departments. And in the process, we will continue to receive feedback. Jason and Amy actually set up a Survey Monkey. Both departments actually have the task force notes and findings in their draft form, and they've set up a Survey Monkey so that employees, as well as legislators, as well as community partners and members, can give anonymous feedback for what they're seeing in this report. So I think that was an important part, to receive that feedback, especially for employees who might be concerned about retaliation or not wanting to give their name if they had concerns. So, Jason, would you like to add anything?
I think you covered it all. It was a pretty thorough process. You have the draft report. I thought there was really good dialogue with both boards. They brought up some key points that I know they'll bring some edits to the report that'll help explain certain elements. I don't think it changes the recommendation, but it definitely helps bring out some questions as to why this was, was this considered, and yes, it was, and what was the conclusion of it. There's a few of those instances, so I thought it was very valuable feedback in that sense.
So will we see those edits before the HHS meeting?
The task force is actually going to meet the day before the next HHS meeting, so we have to try to figure out whether or not we can get those out to you in advance or not. So if we can, we definitely will. Worst case scenario, you'll have them and we'll be able to explain them. It's not as if it's pages and pages of edits, but there's probably three or four good solid edits that I think are add good more explanation. So if we can't get it out to the HHS ahead of time, we'll come prepared to explain what changes have been made to the report before it's finalized.
So, and just to add to Jason's, that the edits were actually feedback that we received from both of the boards. They made some really good points, and there, was definitely a legal piece that I think we were missing in the initial report. Some questions about the integration of the departments, you know, the legalities of it that I think we're adding to the report. So I'm at the discussion has been, you know, as Jason mentioned, it's really been helpful for everyone. And I think the process has been very, very thorough.
Okay. Anything else for Shauna? All right. I'd like to thank you, Shauna. I'd like to have us take a, how about a 7-minute recess? Okay. And then please be back in your seats at 7 after 8. All right. Thank you.
You and Lane have this thing.
Well, you know, 10, you know, you give them 10, they take a mile or whatever. So try for 7. Okay, folks. We're back in session. Could we go to...
Well, I could tell, by the way. You could...
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. F and I met on October 17th. We had a report from Andrew Murphy from Cornell about the airport disposal sites, and there was no significant change in those sites over the last, well, during the year 2018. The report's always a year behind. We also did a capital projects review with the highway department, and we have one more resolution left having to do with the solid waste disposal fee, annual fee, and that represents a $2 increase, which takes it up to $60. So I'm going to move Resolution K, establishing unit charge for 2020 solid waste annual fee, Department of Recycling and Materials Management, ID 8949, and I would move that.
Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion? I would just say, I'm sorry, Barb. I should have moved this up about an hour or so ago. Okay, but I do have a question. So I understand with the institutions you will be negotiating contracts or renegotiating the contracts? The BOCES and the colleges, et cetera?
Yeah, what Jason and I agreed we need to do is, it's been a long time that we've had a particular formula. The formula really is not, does not really apply as well, because a lot of it was based on capital improvements of a large, you know, many millions of dollars. And we don't have anything in writing, even though they must like me and they've agreed to continue to pay. So we're going to be working on that next year with, you know, with committee members and with Jonathan and maybe Rick and Jason and I. So that will be part of the work plan. The last time we looked at that was under Mike Lane's leadership, and obviously it needs to be re-looked at.
Not because of Mike Lane.
No, but he did do a good job, so maybe he's interested in working on this again.
Okay. So when was last time you did, when was that? Last time Mike was facilities?
20 years ago.
Okay.
Been a while, hasn't it?
I mean, you know, I think we need to. Everybody agrees. We had a meeting with the colleges about a lot of the fees, and it was a very good meeting, and everybody is interested in coming to the table. So.
Sounds great. All right. Thank you so much. Anything else for on this resolution? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Other than that, I don't have any further information on Route 13 corridor study as of yet, and hopefully we'll be hearing something more on that soon. And that's my report.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave? Mike Lang.
I could just add a little. I know that the Highland group that's part of the Route 13 study has been making calls. I got a call from them. They spoke to me for about 15 minutes. The other thing is, somebody's been traffic counting. There were 6 sets of traffic counting tubes between Dryden Village and Warren Road. So I expect it's either DOT or our group.
All right, Great. Thank you very much. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Met this afternoon. And we passed some resolutions that most of them will be coming around next meeting. But Jay Franklin came to us and talked to us about the local advisory boards of assessment review in the towns and the city and the villages, or towns and the villages, towns and city, not the villages, I should say. You remember we suspended that on a trial basis for 2019, and apparently folks were okay with it. Jay told us that his department did not have a lot of comments about it and really no negative comments about it. So his recommendation to us was to continue it for a longer trial period, 3 years. So that resolution will be coming next time. We did pass the same resolution we just talked about for the Human Rights Commission amendment to the hold the public hearing for the for the public hearing for the Human Rights Commission, the same resolution we just talked about. We passed two policies which will be coming forward. One of those is a slight change in our official naming policy for rooms and highways and bridges and all that kind of thing. And the other is about the employee emergency leave sharing program, which allows employees to donate some of their salary time to an emergency fund where people who are sick, for example, can draw some out of that. Thanks to our subcommittee which we had, that was Rich and Amanda and Dan. We have a proposal for a policy, a legislative policy on training reimbursement for going to conferences and other things that we've had. We've been talking about that on and off all year. Chair Robertson asked us to take that up again. The subcommittee has come forward with something that we talked about in the Government Operations Committee. You're all going to get to see copies of that. That's going to get sent out so that we can see whether we want to adopt that as what we have. You want to mention anything about that, Rich?
Sure. One, I'd mention our legislative clerks were very helpful in getting us the background information we needed to put a memo together. And what you'll see is a memo. It is not yet a resolution. The idea is just to get the idea out there and make sure it's not too controversial, and then we'll reduce it to a resolution for next GO meeting, if acceptable.
I believe the plaque is here for our Poets Laureate. I don't know whether it's made it to the chambers yet, but we are planning to have and this is, I really got to thank Amanda for her work on this. We're planning for a dedication event, the second meeting in January. And that's when we also designate the Poet Laureate. So stay tuned. Maybe what we'll do probably is something maybe a half an hour ahead of the regular meeting that night. That's all I have.
We have a couple of resolutions.
I do.
Yeah. First, are there any questions about Mike's report? Mike, I did send out an email this afternoon about with some of those comments on the policy and reimbursements and
we talked about those.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we heard about those.
Okay, thank you. We have L, which is
I'm going to ask Amanda to move L, if she would, please.
Sure. I will move resolution L, adoption of local law number E of 2019, a local law enacting the New York State Real Property Tax Law, section 421-F, capital improvements to residential properties, exemption ID 8768.
Second by Deborah. Discussion. Dan.
Sorry, I meant to ask this earlier in the process. Did this resolution end up at TCOG for discussion?
Yes.
Okay. It was meant to.
Yes, it went to the last TCOG meeting. I was there.
Yes.
Yeah, we did. We talked about it.
Okay. Any? There were significant comments.
No. There was no. There were no. Yeah, I was there. There was no comments.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. No. There were. We explained it. We went through it. There were no objections to it.
May I ask Amanda to move this because in committee I voted no, and I will be voting no tonight. Not that perhaps the theory of this, in my view, is very good, but that I don't think we'll have a lot of people applying to use this because of the parameters under state law. I think it adds a lot of extra work to our assessment department.
Anybody else? I understand, you know, I appreciate that, Mike. I will support this, and I know it has been underused, but I think if there's a better communication to homeowners and landlords, because it's not just for owner-occupied buildings, I think that this could help people who are making improvements to their buildings, but it's a matter of getting the word out, so I hope that happens. Anybody else? Ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hands. Please raise them and keep them up. Opposed. That passes 12 to 2. Thank you. And you have M?
Yes, Resolution M. Budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2018 and prior years to various accounts of the departments that report to the Government Operations Committee. That's ID 8910. I so move.
Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Short form roll call. All right. Go ahead.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. All right. Is that it, Mike?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next committee, Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. I think I'll move my resolutions before I forget them. So Resolution G, which was the amendment to the 2015 Comprehensive Plan five-year review, ID 8891. I'll be moving that. If I can get a second.
Seconded by Dave.
This I pulled because Martha had a slight modification that should be in your red folders, adding to the fourth whereas the phrase, including a public hearing on October 15th, 2019. So I guess I'm moving to amend the motion I just...
Friendly.
Something like that.
If that's accepted as friendly.
Yes.
Yeah. Dave, that friendly, David? Okay. Great. Frankly, if I knew it meant all these extra pieces of paper, I probably wouldn't have bothered.
You just really damaged a forest somewhere.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay. Anything else on this? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And then the second resolution I've got is resolution number N, budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2018 and prior years to various accounts of departments that report to the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, ID 8903. And I move that.
Seconded by Dave. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Okay, and then the subject of our last meeting was plastic, still. We had a nice presentation from the NYPERG unit at Cortland about the impact of plastic on our environment. And when I say nice, I mean it was well presented and very effective. It was not nice in terms of what we saw. And our efforts to rein in our use of plastic and styrofoam in Tompkins County continues, so stay tuned.
you very much. Any questions or comments for Deborah? All right, thank you. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We meet. When do we meet, Michelle? I was just looking at the agenda.
November 15th.
November 15th. And we'll be taking up, among other things, some changes to the suggestions for the residency requirements for some of our department people. And we will have a whole list of resolutions, including a bond resolution.
I'm going to move the budget.
We have the budget resolution. I don't know.
Well,
details.
Yeah.
Details. Resolution O, and there's an amended, a revised version.
Ready to do this, folks?
Oh, yes.
More than ready.
Adoption of the 2020 Tompkins County budget and the 2020 through 2024 Tompkins County Capital Program. That's our ID 8995, and I so move.
Second by Leslin. I assume that is the revised with the administrative correction on the number?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great.
If I may, I just want to say that this seems like a going out with a whimper here because we didn't have anybody come to our public hearing, but I think we should say that perhaps we had done a good job in working through our public information people and making sure people knew what we were doing as we went along. After each meeting, we had press releases, thanks to Marsha Lynch. We had a wonderful process participated in by all of our legislators. We had a great proposal from our county administrator and all of his staff, particularly Kevin McGuire, working on it. One more great thing about Tompkins County. We work really hard on the budget. We probably, many people say we do too much, but I don't think we do. I think it's a budget that we can be proud of. And we end up, all of us, knowing about all of the departments.
Thank you, Mike. Anybody else? I would agree. I think it's an excellent process, and also just a point when we talked about the city's funding for the housing fund, where they can allocate an additional 100 this year, but they don't have a 2-year process or a 3-year process. I think it's really very helpful that, I mean, and I guess the technical term is they have zero-based budgeting, where they start. Jason's not sure about that, but okay, whatever they do. They don't look at things in a multi-year way, apparently. I don't know. I think Leslin can tell us all that.
I was going to say, you might want to not touch the city.
Okay. Let's just say, I like the fact that we have different ways of supporting ideas, whether it's, you know, put something that's, you know, an early stage idea into the contingent fund or put something into a 2 or 3 year funding cycle. I think that's a very productive thing to do. Jason, I had a few words about rollover. I like it. You don't, but that's another issue. But we have it.
I don't like it either.
I know. So, but I think it's evolved to be a really comprehensive, logical process. And again, thanks, as we've said earlier, to all the staff who worked months and months and hours on this, especially Kevin and Jason.
If I could just add one other thing, and that is that the department heads and how they came together and helped us here, and how we actually had a real in-depth discussion about our capital program. Great presentation from our administrator and our director of finance, and also a great presentation. We talked about our fund balance and have been talking about some actions we should take with that.
And then Annie?
So I hate to do this, but I have an amendment to this. I'm kidding. I actually did that just to torture Glenn. I'm done. I'm good. I got my reaction.
Okay. All right, good. Annie and then Leslin.
That's what.
Nice, nice, Glenn. That's good.
You're blushing, Glenn.
Good job.
I have two amendments. No. I would like to also thank our department heads who for presenting budgets and who often sat here for hours waiting to present to us at late, you know, very late hours. And I want to thank them, our finance department, our administration, and there's probably other folks that I'm not thinking of, but thank you to everybody who participated in this, not only to give us a great draft budget to go off of, so it needed very little tweaking, but also to my fellow legislators who were very diligent and asked a lot of questions, even though it took longer, but we have a very involved process and a very people are very involved in it, from the departments to the administrators and our legislators, and that is what really, I think, makes a good budget. And we even added a few things in here which I think are better for the environment, better for public safety, and still able to keep the costs of the, or the raising the taxes to a minimal. And so I feel really good about that. So thank you for everybody. And also especially to people who made this understandable, not only to us, but to people in the community, because I think it's really important that we are very transparent about where our money goes.
Leslie?
Annie said, although it took longer. Ooh, girl. I'm just thankful that we don't have as many meetings as we used to have. Thank goodness for that. I actually want to give a shout out to the Human Services Coalition. And on that note, for all the work they do in reviewing the agencies. But it also brought up something for me as I think about this process. We get a chance to hear from OAR. We get a chance to hear from Cooperative Extension, which are not county departments that we fund. But we don't hear from so many of the other agencies that get monies from us. I'm not advocating that we add any more meetings to the expanded budget committee meetings. In the past, we used to hear from, you know, many of those agencies individually. We should shorten that. But going into the new year, perhaps it's something that our committees, you know, might be interested in looking at. So we get a little bit more information about how people are spending the money that they get from the counties. How is it reflecting what we have set out as, you know, values and things that are important to us and direction that are important to us. So just a thought for folks to think about. One of the things I appreciate about the budget process is we all have priorities, and we all have county priorities, overall county priorities. And I think we, in the end, come out at a place where what's most important to us as a county, as a whole body, rises to the level for funding, and we can push forward in making reasonable changes and reasonable accommodations for the people of Tompkins County, not just my pet project. I'd love to have all my pet projects funded, but they all are not for everybody in the county. So I do want to commend all of us. Might not have gotten everything we wanted, but we at least try to set some direction with our budget. So thank you all for your time. Thank you for your patience, because I know for one I can get testy. I'm not even gonna lie, Deborah.
you and I are never testy.
And it is. It really is an exercise in patience sometimes for all of us. So thank you. It was a really good budget process this year, and I appreciate working with all of you on it.
All right. Anything else?
Thanks to Mike for his leadership as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike, for your leadership. It's a complicated and in-depth project and scope of work. Thank you. I do have one question. For the in approving the tentative budget, we did language on that lines 27 and 28 about the median priced home. I couldn't dig it up because I didn't realize it until tonight. Rich, do you remember what it was you suggested, and do we want to do that here?
I saw that. I think we have it. We had it in the...
In the tentative.
Yeah.
Done?
Just, I guess, for our audience that's watching, we're recognizing that on a median-priced home that there's an increase of $11.41, but it's not quite an apples-to-apples comparison because last year the median-priced home was at $185,000. But I think it's okay as it is.
I mean, and the fact is that because the rate is actually dropped, so if your assessment didn't change,
yes,
your tax bill will go down.
Right. We are raising slightly more money, but just marginally.
Okay. Okay. All right. We're ready to vote.
Roll call, please.
All right. Roll call.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes, definitely.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane? Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion? Yes. Martha Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Spend it well, guys. All right. All set, Mike? Is that it?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you so much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Well, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet on December 9th. At that meeting, we will take a look back at something that came out of WDIC as a pilot suggestion a couple of years ago, I don't remember, in which is sort of looking at the potential of a work-from-home policy. The Department of Social Services did a pilot of it, and we hope to hear from Kit and how that has been going, how it's working out. We hope to resume our conversation on the LGBTQ plus law and law enforcement policy for housing, search, and so on. And there was one other conversation which just went out of my head. Oh, and to sort of begin our own discussion at WDIC on what we would like to see in a chief diversity and equity and diversity officer so that we can share our thoughts and comments with county administration and HR as they develop a job description and begin to work towards recruitment. So those are some of the things that we'll be talking about on December 9th. That's my report.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions for Leslie? Thank you very much. Housing and Economic Development, Anna Kellis, Chair.
Well, so we've gone through the resolutions. I will save what we are covering this month for our next meeting, but I will share quickly what two of the big highlights from this last month's meeting, and maybe I think they're highlights because I'm dork and absolutely passionate about this material, but hopefully some of you will find it interesting. One smaller one, TCAD did their 2020 plan workforce for workforce development, or I'm sorry, 2020 work plan. And one of the things that I did want to point out is that they are gearing up to hire the full-time person that they put in the budget for workforce. And one of the things that she communicated, and I appreciated this, is that we recognize we need to gear up more focus on workforce as a county. They do as an agency, as does Workforce Development Board. The work that Workforce Development Board does and through the One Stop Center is much more focused on working with the individuals and the workforce and supporting the workforce. or supporting people to come back into the workforce. TCAD's focus will be on the other side of the spectrum, working on the businesses to identify where there are gaps in and needs for our existing businesses to help them stay local. They need a sufficient workforce. So their emphasis with this position will be more on that other side for the intention of the two positions being complementary. So that was one thing that I think is really important. The other is that we had presentations from incremental development. And I, besides finding their work incredibly fascinating and helpful, they are working with eight developers, small-scale developers, individuals with their projects, including, you know, eight of them sitting around a farmhouse table having, you know, lentil soup and working for 6 hours to get the site plan for this one person out in Danby to try and make a project work despite the lack of sufficient water and sewer. So very creative ideas. I will share one thing that they did this month, and I'm sharing this because I highly recommend that you all do this or bring this as a suggestion to your municipality. They did a workshop with a focus on Trumansburg and the town of Dryden. They took their zoning, laid it out, and split us into groups and took in a property and said, go, develop this property. Here's the zone. See what you can do. Here's their comprehensive plan. Here's their existing zoning code. And identify, like, all the things that you can't do. And then mark out and use that to generate a work plan. And it was one of the most inspiring, eye-opening, none of us could create anything we wanted to create to reach these walkable, vibrant, dense communities that every single comp plan in the county has said that they want. So extremely eye-opening, something that I recommend all municipalities do. And we will be meeting on the 22nd this month at 10:30. That is a Friday at 10:30, so that we can avoid the holidays. That's my full report.
Thank you, Anna. Any questions or comments from anybody? I went to that workshop. I think Anne was there too. In Trumansburg. So are they going to continue to work with those eight developers? Is that part of the contract with Plymouth?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. Okay, terrific. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Can I get a motion on three sets of minutes? Moved by Sean, a second by Deborah. That's October 10th, October 15th, and October 29th. Any comments or suggestions? Did I say moved by Sean, a second by Deborah? I'm fading here. I'm fading
fast. You did 2 hours ago.
Gee, I wonder why. Okay. All right. All in favor of the minutes of those three sessions, three meetings? Any opposed? Those are unanimous. Dan, you're not opposed, are you? Just your hand is lazy. Okay. All those are approved unanimously. Thank you very much. Could I get a motion to go into executive session? Sorry, folks. Moved by Deborah, seconded by Anna. This is to go for real estate negotiations and to discuss personnel about a particular person. All right. All in favor of executive session, please raise your hands. I know you're enthusiastic about this. Any opposed? One opposed.
Basically.
All right. It passes 13 to 1. No, that's unanimous?
Yes.
Glenn?
Yes.
It's unanimous. All right. Let's take a 5-minute break and then come on back. Thank you. So unanimous.